Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
All right, Ted Anderson's with us another 5 minutes. And Ted, let me just have you back on. Let me just have you back on for the whole third hour, if you can do it, to actually get into monetary issues and not just sit here and pitch gold and silver. And again, we pitch things we believe in, which then funds our operation. But that's why I get so excited about all this, because I believe in it. I just called Ted last week, and Ted, you've been so busy. I asked what you thought the best of the radio specials were, and you were going to call me back. I was going to get a few gold coins and some silver. And Ted, you didn't call me back, so I need to call one of your brokers, don't I?
Yeah, well, no, we'll get it done. But I can tell you right now, watching the charts yesterday, silver and gold both, it was just coming along and going, and then all of a sudden a spike upward. I mean, to have a $46 increase in gold in one day and about $4.60 in silver in one day, are you kidding me? And that's just quantitative easing. That's just the news breaking. The FOMC Open Market Committee comes out and they decide that they're going to get into this quantitative easing. But like you say, it's not called QE3. The reason why that is because QE2 had an end date to it and a goal, and this is how much we're going to do. This is open-ended quantitative easing. They said that we're going to continue to print more money and to get the printing presses rolling until they see the economic results that they're looking for. And basically, it's just an open-ended thing. We're heading off of a cliff, Alex. And if people aren't smart enough to get out of paper, I mean, I don't care. Find, you know, buy storable foods. I don't care what you buy, but get yourself out of the paper.
Ted, you predicted this. Porter Stansberry predicted it. Gerald Celente predicted it. They all predicted it. We all predicted it, and it means curtains. In fact, I have a clip of Ron Paul here. This is Ron Paul last night saying we should be panicking over this. And Ron Paul's never talked like that. This means inflation. And because it's not targeted as a real turning up the printing presses, that at least helps the people on one level. This is all pointed at the ultra rich. It's going to be a double whammy. Here's Ron Paul.
The one thing that Bernanke has not achieved that frustrates him, I can tell, is he gets no economic growth. He doesn't do anything with the unemployment numbers. And from my viewpoint, I think the country should have panicked over the fact of what the Fed is saying, that we've lost control. And the only thing we have left is massively creating new money out of thin air, which hasn't worked before, and it's not going to work this time.
You know, Ted, I'm going to be honest. You know me privately. I'm very calm, very intellectual, very focused until I get on air. And then I turn into the wild man because I get so angry about this stuff. But I don't do it on purpose. But intellectually, this has been like a bomb being dropped on us. And I'm so angry that I even sarcastically made fun of the fake UT bomb threat for the first 45 minutes of the show, instead of really talking about the full magnitude of this unlimited QE. I mean, but as Ron Paul just said, this means that this is all they've got, and they're going to use it to transfer wealth. You know, Ron Paul says they're trying to fix it. Look, the globalists admit they've engineered this. So it's time to stop saying they don't know what they're doing. They're in control. They run a global government. They know exactly what they're doing. Ted, I'm not knocking Ron Paul here. But, you know, he gives them this thing that they don't know what they're doing. I've been saying for over a decade this was coming exactly as it has. George Humphrey's been saying it for 14 years, economist, friend of mine. This is an engineered collapse, Ted.
I know, you've been talking about that, and I've alluded to that as well. The very system that's set up creates debt. You know, money from debt is going to just mean more debt. As the economy grows, we're going to get further into the hole.
And they hold the debt. Listen, can you do a full hour with us and take calls?
Yeah, we'll go ahead and do that on the third hour.
I'll see you back in 55 minutes, Ted.
All right, sounds good.
Folks, give Midas Resources a call. Ask them about radio specials. That's where I get my gold and silver. And again, I bought gold at $260 an ounce. I didn't sell it when it hit $2,000. When it dropped down to $1,650, I didn't sell. Same thing with silver. I bought silver at $5 an ounce. When it got up to 40, 45, 50 bucks an ounce, I didn't sell any of it. When it went down, I didn't sell it because I understand what's happening.
On the front lines of the information war, it's Alex Jones.
What we are looking at is good and evil, right and wrong. A new world order.
Well, I tell you, we are really excited to have this fellow on because the last year or so, he has exploded on the scene with Fox 19 television. And he's also worked at other TV stations around the country. And he just absolutely knocks it out of the park on pro-Second Amendment stuff, on covering how Ron Paul and the Liberty Movement were shafted by the Republican establishment. He got an interview with President Obama last week. We're going to play a clip of later where he really nails him down on the NDAA and secret arrest of American citizens. But by the way, a federal court 2 days ago did a permanent injunction. Of course, we had Chris Hedges on, the Pulitzer Prize winning journalist who was part of that suit. Now Obama is appealing to the Supreme Court. He also has looked at some of the anomalies of the shootings there in Colorado. So basically, he's like a professional, focused, kind of new style Alex Jones, which I love. We need more people that have courage, and I think this guy's going places. Let me tell you, because he's got it all, and it is so exciting to see reporters like this. Now, I'll say this: I remember Bill O'Reilly on Fox Television 13 years ago interviewing people like Tony Brown about the Illuminati and the New World Order, and I saw him on Extra, was it Hard Copy, 20-something years ago. We have the tape, we played it, exposing how the government and E. Howard Hunt basically killed JFK. So I hope that Ben Swan, if he ends up on national television, doesn't turn over to the dark side like Bill O'Reilly. But I got to tell you, it's just great to have him on and know there's other people out there. In fact, if you're a radio listener, if you could see him, we bring him up on Skype, you know who I'm talking about. But in a few minutes, we'll play some clips, and you'll know who we're talking about. But Ben, it is great to have you on with us here today.
Alex, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
So tell us about your awakening. I mean, how they allow you in mainstream television to tell the truth.
You know, a lot of people are asking that question and how we get to cover the things that we do. And I'm really blessed. I work at a TV station that is not owned by Fox. We're a Fox affiliate. And because of that, a lot of people assume that we're owned by Fox. We're not. We're owned by Raycom Media. And I work for guys who are just interested in getting out factual information. And so we've had a tremendous response. I think the response that we've gotten from people has been just beyond expectation, far above and beyond expectation. And people are really hungry for it. They're hungry for someone who will look beyond, the typical mainstream narrative. And obviously, I mean, this is no surprise to you because clearly, you know, the issue with alternative media is it is growing so fast right now versus what's happening with national media or mainstream media, which is essentially dying right now. And there's a reason for that. I mean, people have already heard all these same types of narratives before, and they're tired of them, and they're moving beyond them. And so we're fortunate to be kind of the bridge, I think, between alternative media and mainstream media.
By the way, I should add, they give you leeway because you have won both the Edward R. Murrow Award and two Emmys that you got, I guess, reporting from Texas. I mean, you are quite the journalist. And so you're actually really doing real research. It's just, it's amazing. And again, mainstream media would still be dominant if people like you were on the national scene. How long have you been there in Cincinnati?
For about a year and a half, just a little over a year and a half. And about 2 to 3 months after I came to this station, we had this idea that we were going to try something different because it was time to kind of rebrand ourselves a little bit. And we moved towards a balanced news brand. Which, again, sounds very much like the Fox brand. And so there are advantages to that, but then there are some disadvantages because there are some people who go into it automatically thinking, well, you're just, you know, little mini Fox News. And part of the goal of that balanced brand was to do this segment called Reality Check, where we'd look beyond headlines and actually hold politicians accountable. I'm not sure my bosses realized how accountable we were going to hold them, but so far they've been extremely supportive of it. And we're doing our best to get out there and get to the facts.
How did you get the Obama interview? And then give us some of the behind the scenes. We're going to play a clip of it in a moment. But I mean, pretty amazing. Out of a sea of journalists and so-called mainstream media, no one will ever ask him a hard question. We know now that for the first time ever, they're vetting the questions beforehand. They're in the press briefing room. And also when Obama goes out and gives official press conferences, you obviously got off script there and actually did your job.
Well, you know, with the Obama interview, and it's pretty simple. I mean, he's been very good about doing these interviews with local media everywhere he goes. And it's actually a very good strategy, because what you wind up having are reporters who go out and ask a number of questions. Typically, they're locally focused. So in the case of Ohio, they'll ask about the auto industry. They're going to ask about jobs in Ohio, the economy, which is actually doing better than in a lot of places in the nation. And so it's really a good place for him to do those interviews. But he does them everywhere. And we were just next on the list. And as we went down the list, and they gave us the call and said, you know, send somebody up, and it was us. I think one of the advantages that I had was the week before, we had done a one-on-one with Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan together. And when we sat down with them, you know, we weren't easy on them. And one of the questions we asked Romney about was how, you know, his campaign, along with the RNC, had worked to decredential and essentially disenfranchise all of these Republican delegates from the state of Maine. And so we were hard on Romney, and I think that they suspected, I don't know this, but I think they suspected we would probably not be as hard on the president, because as you know, Alex, I mean, that's the way media works in this country. You either support one side and then attack the other, or vice versa. So, you know, they allowed us to come in and do the interview. They put no prerequisites on it, just told us you have 5 minutes, and when your 5 minutes is up, you know, you're done. And so we went from there.
Incredible. We're going to play a clip of that right now. In fact, here it is from the intro of the news piece. Folks can go to fox19.com and watch the whole thing. And I should add, other Fox affiliates around the country who are on YouTube are lucky to get a few thousand views, even a big stories. Your stories are getting hundreds of thousands and millions of views, again, showing that the future is real reporting, real questions. There's no debate the NDAA is unconstitutional. The courts have already ruled it. There's no debate. It's super scary, right out of Nazi Germany. So media, though, just acts like, oh, we're going to be non-biased. Well, I mean, a ham sandwich is a ham sandwich. A draconian piece of legislation is draconian. And that's the end of it. I mean, you have to report the facts. You've done that. And the media can take a cue from this. Here it is.
Mr. President, first of all, thank you for taking the time to talk with us. When you signed the National Defense Authorization Act into law, you issued a signing statement at that time that said you would not use that power for indefinite detention on Americans. You understood the concerns that people had. A judge earlier this year issued that the administration couldn't use those powers because it's unconstitutional. So why are the government's own lawyers fighting that judge's order, the injunction in particular?
Well, look, the basic principle here is, number one, my first job is to keep the American people safe. Number two, we've got to do it in a way that respects our values and our traditions of rule of law. That's why I banned torture. That's why I've argued that we should actually close Guantanamo. But I've also said that, you know, we've got some bad guys who are down there who we may not be able to try in a traditional court, but have pledged to try to hurt Americans. And so that's something that we inherited, that we're dealing with, and it's complicated. On the other hand, what I also said was a U.S. citizen can never be subject to that kind of detention. Congress disagreed with me, and I didn't want us to not be able to finance our military and pay our soldiers and our troops. So I signed the bill, but what I also said was, look, that I'm never going to use this power, and you know, what I would suspect is that the courts are going to agree with us over the long term that that is not something that you can use when it comes to U.S. citizens.
Well, let me ask you then also about the so-called presidential kill list that's gotten a lot of attention, and this list of folks who have been targeted for assassination. Right. And on that list have been U.S. citizens who have not been afforded trial, including Anwar al-Awlaki.
All right, let's stop right there.
How do you, as president, or any president for that matter...
Yeah, we've got Anwar al-Awlaki, who dined secretly at the Pentagon. We've got all that going on. And we've got the fact that Obama, it turns out, demanded that it be added to the bill, the indefinite detention of Americans. And he's got his Justice Department fighting to defend the legislation of the NDAA and his signing of it. And then he just sat there, Ben, and told you that, oh, he knew that the courts would overturn it. I mean, that makes Bill Clinton look like he's honest.
Well, you know, look, this story, especially on the kill list, has gotten so much attention nationally and to the point where it was picked up by The Atlantic and Huffington Post and a lot of liberal, even the UK Guardian, liberal publications ran that interview. And it was really interesting to me to go through and to read the comment section, not so much what they were writing, but the comment section afterward. There were a couple of things that were very interesting there. Because as I think you alluded to a minute ago, we're not really breaking ground here in terms of those questions. I mean, those questions are not conspiratorial. They're not, you know, these kind of off in the weeds questions. This is stuff that's pretty much out there, and it's pretty easy to find. Any reporter can find it. The discussion on the NDAA or the kill list or the situation with Awolaki. The problem is, I believe the problem really stems from the fact that media won't talk about these things because it does require some a real effort to dig into it. I got a couple of interviews with reporters who asked me about it. Why would you ask those questions? And how could you even ask that? I mean, how would you even have the background on it? Well, because we've been covering it for a year. We've covered all of these issues. You mentioned about the Obama administration asking for it. We've covered extensively that statement by Carl Levin on the Senate say.
I tell you what, stay there. We're going to come right back after break and continue. Yeah, the senator, Carl Levin, and others came out and said, hey, don't blame us for this. You asked for this, and then they released the letter. I mean, the whole time Obama says, I don't want it, and then he says, don't worry, I'll veto it, so opposition can't form. And then he gets it passed, and then he says, I won't sign it, but then he does. I mean, this is incredible deception. Stay there, Ben Swan. All right, we're back live. We've got Ben Swan. He reports for Fox 19 out of Cincinnati, Ohio, and every week makes national news because he covers hardcore issues and does his research. And I think you were alluding before we went to break there, Ben, that the media kind of comes to you and is like, how do you know this? How do you? It's almost like you're reading a book. That's weird. I've had other media ask me questions like, how do you know all this stuff? And I'm like, well, I'm into the news. I'm into the information. So elaborate on that. And then, yeah, I continue on the point you were getting into with Obama saying, well, you know, I knew courts would overthrow it when it turns out he was the one, his White House, demanding that the indefinite detention for citizens be in there.
You're right. Well, absolutely. And let me just comment on that second part first, because you'll notice in the interview that we did with him, you know, you got 5 minutes, so there's not a whole lot of time. If you want to fight over one subject, you're not going to get much else in there. And so what we choose to do, because of the segment we do with Reality Check and the way it's built out, you know, really is perfect for going in, you ask the question, he gives the answer, but we don't leave it at that. And that's what so much national media does now. It's a he said, she said. I ask the question, you give the answer, and we're done. What we do is say, okay, I'll ask the question, you give the answer, and then we're going to go back and fact check your answer. And if you're wrong, we're going to say you were wrong. And if you're not being honest, we're going to say you're not being honest. So what we saw in that case is he never directly addresses the second part of my question, which was, why are your own lawyers fighting that injunction? Which, of course, as you just mentioned, that question's now dated because as of yesterday, they're now fighting the overall striking down of the indefinite detention clause, and they are appealing that ruling. So if the president is honest when he says, we always knew it would be struck down, we believe that it would go to the courts, we believe the courts would side with us, show me how that's siding with you if you're the one fighting it. Regardless, you know, as you mentioned a minute ago, with media, people keep asking, well, how do you know all this stuff? And really, there are two things. Number one is, as you mentioned, you just have to do a little bit of research, and there's so much of this stuff out there. And again, it's because of the internet. It's because of alternative media. And also, look, listen, I've got brilliant, brilliant people who follow me on Facebook, on Twitter. I mean, the people who I call themselves followers or fans, that's the term that Facebook uses, right? I'm fans of theirs. I'm a huge fan of theirs because they're so smart and they have so much information and they just constantly are feeding back into me a lot of information and what's going on in the world and did you know this and did you know this? And I feel like they've been helping me to gain an education because there's so much stuff out there and they're just helping to draw it all in.
Well said, man. I tell you, it is so refreshing, Ben, to see somebody professionally get up there and I told Chris Hedges this last week because I'm not liberal or conservative. I'm just about truth and justice and freedom because I love my wife and my children. And I want a future. It's refreshing to have somebody like Chris Hedges out there fighting the NDAA with his lawsuit and winning. And it's refreshing to see somebody like you, well-spoken, focused, handsome, getting the word out and reaching millions from one little TV station, because it gives me hope that there are going to be other people out there that can do a better job than I can. That's what I told Chris Hedges. I mean, we all have our own tools in the fight for liberty. It's great. Now I'm wondering who else is going to step up? Who else is going to take action? Because all that evil needs to flourish is that good men and women do nothing. And so I salute what you're doing. And the point you make about what your listeners and viewers are saying, following the points they give you, it's incredible data. It's like the comments under the stories you were alluding to, the amazing points they're making. And you see everywhere, whether it's a right-wing site or a left-wing site with those bias, the comments more and more aren't left-wing or right-wing. They're like, hey, we see through this.
Right, right. Well, no, that's absolutely true. And what was exciting about, like, for instance, the Huffington Post is a good example. On the HuffPo article, if you read the comments, it was so interesting to hear people who are so used to this left-right paradigm that they couldn't even begin to fathom the idea. So their first complaint is, well, you're from a Fox station, so what you're asking the president about, you know, this kill list can't possibly be true. Secondly, it's the same people in many cases who wanted Bush tried as a war criminal, who want Cheney tried as a war criminal, who give Obama a pass on his kill list. And so it was really interesting, that dynamic was they were really struggling through it. And then, of course, you know, I posted it on my social networking pages so that people could see it there, go there and comment. And what was exciting to me was some of our people, when I say our, I mean, you know, liberty-minded people, start writing on there. And actually, we're winning some arguments and I think even winning over some people's minds, saying, look, you have to break through and shatter through that paradigm that says it's left versus right, Republican versus Democrat, because it's not. It's liberty versus oppression. That's what the real issue is. And I think people are beginning to see that.
Wow, we're going to go to break of a long 18-minute segment coming up. I want to get into your favorite reports and what you're working on now, and then open the phones up for your fans all over the United States and worldwide that watch your reality check just as soon as it comes out. I know we do. And I remember seeing you about a year and a half ago. I'm like, man, this is something different. And then the reports just keep coming. And then in hindsight, they're so accurate. A breath of fresh air, folks. A breath of fresh air. We'll be right back. The toll-free number to join us, 800-259-9231. Stay with us.
The answer to 1984 is 1776. You're listening to The Alex Jones Show.
Well, he is an award-winning researcher, reporter, TV anchor. He anchors the news there on Fox 19, fox19.com in Cincinnati, Ohio, working at other stations in Texas. He's won the Edward R. Murrow Award and two Emmys on his mantle. And he's a patriot, very exciting. I want to get into some of his other stories here. Ben Swan, local Ohio reporter, grills Obama on kill list. Here's another one, reality check. Is the embassy attack in Libya a clear example of blowback? Here's another one. Will the Libya attack shape American foreign policy moving forward? These are the important questions. Now, he goes on, did RNC script the rule changes? Will that start a civil war in the Republican Party? He questioned the Aurora shooting and the anomalies and people saying other shooters and all the rest of it. I mean, this is what we need to talk about. These are the questions. I've got to ask you this, not to promote my show or anything. I'm just flattered by it. My producer was telling me when he asked, hey, have you ever heard of the Alex Jones Show, that you indeed have heard of the show and do listen sometimes. Now, I know as a journalist, I'm more of a journalist / commentator, you know, rabble rouser. I wear a lot of hats around here. But I'm just curious, how did you stumble across my broadcast and how did it affect the different perspectives that you're bringing to your own show?
Well, I would say that I knew of you because I'm from Texas, and obviously you're down in Texas. So now I'm from further west than you are, I was aware of you and had heard your name. And then most of it really was very conspiratorial, and the guy's a nut job, and so I didn't really know much about you. And then once I've gotten more into what we've been covering the last few months, I had a lot of people who have said, you know, Alex Jones has covered a lot of these things, and obviously there are people who are weary because, as you said, you're more of a commentator. So in your case, certainly it's more of a, there's more opinion infused into it, more perspective infused into it, which is fine. I mean, clearly you're doing what you do. So I think that, I do think there's something very important about alternative media. And one of the things that I think is impressive, regardless of how people feel about you one way or the other, because obviously you have many, many fans out there and you got people who don't feel as strongly about you or dislike you, and that's not necessarily a bad place to be. Look, I always tell people, I would rather people love me or hate me, but don't feel nothing about me. Because as soon as you're the guy that people feel nothing about, then you're not accomplishing anything. You know, at least challenge the narrative and challenge what people are thinking and challenge their minds. And so I think you do a great job of that. And I take my hat off to you for that.
Well, I just wanted to get your perspective because I, again, admire your courage and what you're doing. I mean, obviously, you're a talented guy. And I hope that it doesn't, count against you with the power structure that you're telling the truth. Have you gotten any big national offers yet in the last year and a half that you've been knocking it out of the park?
No. In fact, very, very little talk from anyone higher up, which is fine with me. One of the things that I don't ever want to do is I never want to look beyond where I'm at right now. As I mentioned at the beginning of this, I'm incredibly blessed to be doing what I'm doing and to have the platform that I have. And I will say that in the last year and a half, my view of what, you know, national media is has completely changed. And certainly my view of what it means to be a national voice, because we're sitting here in little old Cincinnati, Ohio, and yet we have a global voice right now. And people in 30 different countries are watching what we do. And it's this little 5-minute segment. And, we do it 3 times a week.
Yeah. I was Glenn Beck launching his new TV network back on television, I would hire somebody like you. I think that'd probably be a perfect fit. I mean, Glenn Beck actually is in competition with me. He thinks I'm not in competition with him. I want to defeat the globalists. There's no future. But the reason I brought up myself was I wanted to get into your view of the world, because I know as a journalist, you don't want to put any of those views out because then they could say, oh, well, that's his bias. But come on. I mean, tyranny is tyranny. I mean, it wouldn't be, oh, you have a bias in 1860 because you were against slavery and, oh, that's your opinion. Obviously, it's the right position to be against slavery. I mean, some of these things are so clear. What is your view of QE3? What is your view of the TSA? All of this stuff. I mean, is it that the world's getting crazier, that that's brought you closer to, say, my views?
Well, here's what I think. You know, you asked about QE3, and we're actually doing a piece on it next week to explain to people exactly how it works and what the design is behind it. My issue is less about, like, for instance, obviously I have very strong opinions, but I think most people do. My issue is more about making sure that I'm not going to necessarily try to sway someone else's opinion. I just want their opinion to be based on fact, not on fairy tale. And I think what we see too often in modern media is that we're allowing people to buy into fairy tales. We don't challenge them. Jon Stewart does a hilarious bit making fun of the way that CNN does their whole, we'll leave it there. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but they have this phrase, we'll leave it there. And he made fun of that one time. And the fact that they say, we'll leave it there on major issues that shouldn't be left there, because you're not allowing people to go through this process of critical thinking and to say, well, what does this actually mean for my life? So when Ben Bernanke announces, yeah, we're going to go ahead and move on with QE3 and it'll help the economy, I would be willing to bet you that only 1/10 of the population, if even that, has any clue as to what he's talking about, has any clue at all. Maybe even, 1% of the population really understands what.
No, I agree with you, because I've talked to so many bankers, business people, even folks that are worth hundreds of millions of dollars. They don't. Who are in finance, they don't understand what this means.
Right. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Because there are so many different components to it. You know, you mentioned that we've been talking a lot about the issue in Libya, what's going on over there right now. And one of the reasons we're able to do that is because if you go all the way back to when we first started doing these, one of the very first reality check segments we ever put together was about the fact that the U.S. was getting involved in Libya and it didn't make sense as to why we were doing it. The fact that we were involving ourselves without a declaration of war. And now we're starting to see kind of the ramifications of that foreign policy and what's it really about. One of the things we're going to move into in the next few weeks, and I think people will be pretty interested in it, is we're going to start taking a look at the situation with the petrodollar and what China's doing right now in terms of these refineries they're attempting to build in Saudi Arabia and in Egypt, and ultimately what it's going to mean if the petrodollar disappears and there's a new currency in which oil was bought and traded. If that happens, it means a change in the way of life for every American that people don't even see coming, because nobody's talking about it in national media. Alternative media, you guys are talking about it.
Thank you, Mr. Edward R. Murrow. Absolutely on target. Right there. That is so exciting to hear someone in mainstream news understand that. And the power structure knows this, but it's at a very high technocratic level. They're engineering this while moving their assets to China and other areas ahead of this seismic shift to bring in this global governance, this world government run by the private banks. How do I know that? They wrote about it 30 years ago. They wrote about it 10 years ago. They now brag about it here and there. So more and more, the mainstream media realizes they're passé. Have you seen the CNBC clip where they admit, hey, we're all slaves to global government run by bankers?
No, I haven't seen that one.
Guys, can we cue that up, please, the CNBC clip? Because in more and more publications, they are admitting it, but it's more in establishment publications or in trade publications. They're admitting where we're going. But this isn't just quantitative easing. It's also been, and I want your take on this, going directly to the mega banks themselves as a kind of bailout. I mean, the $40 billion a month, half of the $80 billion goes to buy these derivatives, these mortgage derivatives. I mean, that isn't the taxpayer's job to pay for that.
No, absolutely not. And they're doing exactly what you said. What they're essentially doing is saying, look, we're going to go in and we're going to buy all these mortgage-backed securities and derivatives. And in doing so, they are creating a system where they're socializing the profit, they're privatizing the profit in that the banks are the ones who will profit from it. But then they're socializing the risk of it. They're buying up all these risky things with our dollars, then turning around and saying, well, here are the profits for that. We don't share in the profits of it. The other issue is that this is indefinite. And people may not realize this, but when you move into quantitative easing that has no end to it, it's simply indefinite, and you're going to buy all this up. If you have a 401k, if you have a mutual fund that you're investing into for your retirement, all of those very safe ones that traditionally have done well, those are all going to be bought up by the Fed. So the Fed's going to have control of that. The government will control all of those safe bets, which means if you have money you need to put aside for your own retirement, they're actually going to force you to put it into riskier stocks. There are no safe bets because they're going to buy up all the ones that are safe. So it really hurts everyone in this process. It doesn't just help the banks, but it actually puts the average investor in a position where everything they're investing into for their future that traditionally has been very safe is now going to be very risky.
They infect the whole system, then hold you hostage and say, we're too big to fail, and then basically transfer all the wealth to themselves while destroying your wealth. Then they're the last group standing, and they're able to buy everything up for pennies on the dollar. That is the economic model of conquest that we're now facing as a society. And as you just stated, when they announce unlimited QE3, that leads one place. It leads to Weimar Republic, Germany, type inflation. It leads to Zimbabwe style inflation. That is the road that they've now put us on. And like you said, it's just a minor footnote. Oh, QE3, no connection to gold exploding and other commodities like gasoline, oil spiking. And this is just with the announcement. And here are the insiders now, not doing QE1, QE2, QE3, unlimited, open-ended QE3. Now they get to know, the insiders, when they're going to be doing it with these little adjustments. The insider trading ramifications are stratospheric.
Well, what's interesting, too, is even the terms that are used, QE1, QE2, QE3, it sounds like it is the third time that the Fed has gone through this process in order to, as most people would call it, stimulate the economy. The problem is QE1, QE2, and QE3 are not the same thing at all. They were completely different programs that were designed in order to affect the markets and affect the system. So it's not, QE3 is not round three, and that's what most people think that it is. It's an entirely different setup. Again, as you mentioned, buying up all of these mortgage-backed derivatives. And as a result of that, I think most people have no idea. They think QE3, more stimulus, that means the government's going to put more money into the system. Well, that's good for everyone. And again, as you mentioned too, most financial channels and most financial reporters aren't even talking about it in any term that people can understand. But what you described right now about shifting all of this burden away from the banks themselves, putting the risk onto the taxpayer, buying up the safe bets, shifting their own money. This is all stuff that, when you say it, a lot of people would say, oh, it's Alex Jones, it's all conspiratorial. It's not a conspiracy at all in terms of being hidden. It's a conspiracy that's happening right out in the open, and anyone can find this information. They're just not bothering to do so. They're too busy worried about the fact that Jersey Shore's off at the end of the season.
Well, exactly. And a lot of times I get up here and rant and rave because I'm genuinely upset. That tends to get people out of their trance to realize something's going on. And I kind of make it safe to talk about these things, and then others can start to cover it. So I think everybody, you know, the Lord works in mysterious ways. That's why I'm excited to see you and others out there, you know, exposing this in a, you know, really focused news style, because that will reach people out there who've kind of heard about this but think it's a conspiracy theory. And there you are with a whole news team behind you, able to lay all this out, and people can go again to fox19.com to find all your reports. They're also on YouTube. Before we go to some phone calls here and talk about some of the other reports you're working on right now, Ben Swan, award-winning reporter joining us right now, I wanted to ask you the question about your social media and thing, some of your own private websites or things outside of the Fox site if folks want to follow some of the things you're talking about off air.
Yeah, they can go over to Facebook. We have a pretty strong Facebook page. It's facebook.com/Ben Swan Reality Check. That's the easiest way to find it. And Swan is two N's. So if you're not familiar with me, then you've got to put in BenSwann Reality Check. And then you can follow us on Twitter as well. And it's at Fox19 Ben Swan. So we're doing work on both of those sites. We don't really have much going on with Google Plus yet, but we're working on creating some circles there, create more discussion again. Because as I mentioned, I mean, I'm a huge fan of the people who follow me. And I just feel like those are the folks, so many of them are so smart and savvy, and they know what's going on. They're awake is the term I would use for them. And when you get around people who are awake, it energizes you and it keeps you
going. Yeah, that's what's happened. Well, I've seen your sites. It's basically... It's liberty lovers. It's my listeners. It's your listeners. It's people that understand what's happening and who are breaking down the left-right paradigm and saying, hey, it's about liberty. Now, the Democrats just so happen to be, you know, absolute tyrants. The Republicans, same ball of wax. I tend to agree with the Republicans more because on the surface they say they're pro-gun and things like that. But again, at the very top, you see with somebody like Obama and Romney, past the rhetoric, there's almost no difference. What's your take on that?
Oh, absolutely. I think there is, you have to strain to find a real substantive difference between President Obama and Mitt Romney. And that's one reason why the two of them, I think, are going to really struggle when you get into this debate. The conventions were fascinating for folks who were kind of political watchers. The conventions were really interesting because the Republicans did such a poor job of shaping their message. Their message really wasn't about what they're going to change in the future. It was about how Obama had failed and he hadn't done enough, and they really pushed for this "we built it" kind of idea because they were using a play on words. But there really wasn't a vision for what they would do differently. The Democratic convention, the same way, there was no real vision for the future. It was, well, if we go with that guy, we're not going to like it. And so there was very little vision casting in either convention, which was kind of fascinating to me. And part of the reason I think for that is because if you really break down the direction that Governor Romney wants to take the country and the direction President Obama does, there are some differences in terms of how they want to deal with taxation, how they want to deal certainly with people who are in higher income brackets and taxation. But if we're talking about, for instance, foreign policy, tell me one thing Governor Romney will do differently than what President
Obama does. TSA or NSA or the police state or any of these things that really matter. It's like MapQuest plotting two different ways to go to the same destination. I mean, there's some changes in the route, but it goes the same place.
Absolutely, because ultimately their view, and even when we talk about, you know, you asked me about some of my own personal views. Look, I'm a journalist. I'm a constitutionalist. My personal view is that the Constitution, rule of law, is what our founders and framers designed. They knew that we should not be a democracy. People say all the time we're a democracy. It's one of my biggest pet peeves. We're not a democracy.
We're a republic.
We're a republic, absolutely. And the difference is vast. The republic is rule of law. Democracy is rule of mob. And so all you need is a plus one in a democracy in order to push through any crazy laws or rules.
And rob the other 49%. It's two wolves and a sheep voting on what's for dinner. But again, that's terrorist talk, according to the Homeland Security. Have you done a report yet on MIAC and Homeland Security reports saying veterans and gun owners are the terrorists?
You know what? Some people have been sending me some of that information, and we are looking at doing something on that.
All right, we're going to break.
Like constitutionalists, if you believe in the Constitution, you're a terrorist.
Exactly. We're going to break. As usual, I've hogged the guests. We got loaded phone lines for you, but let me just add this here. DrudgeReport.com. It's also at InfoWars.com. Our story about the nuclear reactor also evacuated at the J.J. Pickle Center here in Austin, Texas. It's top red linked at the number one website in the world, drudgereport.com. You can go there, and I'm glad that our servers are still staying up, because that'll probably send us about 3 million readers. Or is the site still up, Infowars.com? Top linked there, and they're now evacuating multiple campuses, not just the University of Texas, but up in North Dakota as well, over the someone's basically saying they're Al-Qaeda, saying all these bombs are about to go off. We've got reporters still downtown. Well, now they've gone to the reactor, so they'll be popping in during the next hour a little bit when we cover QE3 or unlimited QE, what that means, and so much more. But straight ahead, final segment. Maybe I'll twist his arm for 5 more minutes into the next hour so we can take 6 or 7 calls with Ben Swan from Fox19.com.
I think that right now the question is, do we all work for central bankers? That's what I want to address to our guest tonight. Is this global governance at last? Is it one world, the central bankers in charge? Jim Urio, you say we've got some downside here, a correction in the markets. Fine. But aren't we all just living and dying for what the central banks do? Aren't we all just counting on the fact that there's a Bernanke put and that we won't go any lower than, say, 5% down from here?
Of course we are, because if we look at the economic data, nothing to get excited about in that.
And they go on for 5 minutes to all agree we're run by global government, run by banks. Exactly what I said 17 years ago was going to happen, because I was reading the Trilateral Commission public documents. But the issue here is Bernanke said a year ago there'd be no QE3. Well, now it's just unlimited QE. And they wanted us to beg for it first, because if they don't do it, we're in trouble. But if they do, we're in trouble because they engineered this. Ben Swan, he's one of the anchors over there, an investigative reporter at Fox 19 in Cincinnati, now has a national, international following via YouTube and their site. We're taking phone calls. Got a lot of fans out there. We're going to take 5 phone calls for you for this short segment and the next, and you're gone. Let's talk to Brian in Colorado. You're on the air with our guest. Go ahead.
Big fan of yours, Mr. Swan, and you as well, Mr. Jones. I wanted to bring you up to pace on a few things that I found out. I live in Colorado, and it's very frightening to have the ATF state they're going to take people's guns rights that smoke marijuana or use marijuana, because a lot of people in Colorado have guns, and a lot of people in Colorado smoke marijuana. But the thing I really wanted to point out to you gentlemen is that through my research, I found that marijuana oil cures cancer.
And it's certainly been shown to be a treatment. Let me stop you. This is how crazy the news is. That broke after I was off air yesterday. We carried it on the nightly news. I read the ruling from 2 days ago. It's true. They're saying alcohol abuse, marijuana use, any drug, any substance abuse that they say, no judge, no jury, they're taking your guns. Ben Swan, what do you make of that?
I haven't heard it, so I really can't comment on it. I mean, I'd love to see it, though.
It's already in featured news archive. Put it up on screen for folks that are watching and listening. Can find it at Infowars.com. I'll have it reposted to the front page. Let's go. Thank you, Brian. Let's go to Luke in South Korea. You're on the air with Mr. Swan. Go ahead.
Oh, hi there. How are you? I've seen from my own experience with mainstream media that certain stories the government want to have suppressed never make it to air. And in England, they have the DA system, Defence Advisory. They've still got the legacy of that in Australia, and they're trying to reenact it as a voluntary system.
Yeah, it's a D-notice, absolutely. And they're trying to get that here. What's your question for Mr. Swan?
Well, right, with the absence of a D-notice, how does the government get the issues they want suppressed in your
They have opinion? Talking points.
We know it's happening.
I know, because I've talked to national. They have talked. Well, you saw 2 weeks ago where the New York Times is in contact with the CIA and killing stories for them. Ben, your take on that?
Well, absolutely. I think there are definitely talking points that go out. And I think within local media, the issue isn't so much talking points as it is groupthink. If you know, the sister parent station, or if the networks aren't talking about it, then it must not be news. And so it's groupthink on the lower level. Bigger level, it's talking points.
Exactly at the top of the pyramid, talking points are given. White House meetings, you name it, book deals, all of it. because I've been offered it. And then all the little parrots think, oh, those are the stars. If I copy what they say, I'll rise up. When in truth, even if you were a cynical mercenary, being different is what will make you rise up in a stagnant system.
Right on.
All right. I hope that answers your question from South Korea. We're going to race back, and we're going to go to Angel, and then we're going to go to Eric, at least those, maybe some more, for Ben Swan, Fox 19 reporter. But like he said, now from that city, he's worldwide. That's why the dinosaur media is in so much trouble. That's why the info war is exploding.
Big Brother. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
All right, let's go to an InfraGuard story with Chris in Florida. An InfraGuard just hung up. I'm trying to get to your calls. Chris in Florida, you've got a InfraGuard story. Hey, my dad's calling me up right now. Hold on one second. Hey, what's going on? I'm here on the radio. Yeah, okay, you want to come on? I guess you're on your lunch break? No. Call our internal number. Dad, that's a psyop. Then he'll say that isn't your dad. And then he'll say, listen, I can tell that guy's following a script. No. Since you called in now, this is exciting. I'm going to go to my InfraGuard guy. Hey, guys, will you come get my phone and give my dad the hotline number, please? That's hilarious. You don't have to talk about the patient itself. Just tell me. You know what to do. Here it is. I know it was a year and a half ago, Dad. Just hold on. Dad, that's a psyop. They do that to change the subject and imply we're dishonest. Just hold on. Just tell the story. Here it is. Give him the hotline or call him. Just call that number and put him on right now. Anyways, getting back to what I was saying earlier, InfraGuard's admitted, clergy responses admitted. Chris in Florida, finish your InfraGuard story. Go ahead.
Well, Alex, a few years ago, I talked about InfraGuard to a neighbor who claimed to have worked for a Raytheon in the FBI, and then he proudly showed me his InfraGuard card. He turned out to be a busybody, a stalker, not just towards myself, but another neighbor's, and about Peeping Tom as well. He liked to call.
Yeah, I mean, you heard me profile him. That's exactly what my dad was saying. He said he's run into several of these now, and they're, I'm not supposed to get into it all, but the point is, go ahead.
Well, he also liked to call police with false accusations. Apparently, he felt powerful by his InfraGuard card. Maybe everyone should carry one, sort of as a KMA, you know, as a Aaron Russo's talking about Nicholas Rockefeller's thing. He'd really have a KMA chip, kiss my you-know-what chip. Unfortunately, he died of emphysema due to his irresistible smoking habit. If I could bring up another issue that I called about, there's a locally based radio talk network that carries your show, Tan Talk Network, here in the Tampa Bay area on 1340 AM and 1350 AM and 880 AM out of Little Rock, Arkansas. That's a 50,000-watt transmitter, who now accepts the local new community currency called Clearwater Hours.
I want to get the owner of that system on. I know they got us on a bunch of great affiliates. God bless them. Spread the word. Here is my dad, David Jones. Now, that was probably InfraGuard calling in, because you notice they wouldn't admit InfraGuard or any of it exists. It was, I want to hear your dad. It isn't true. As if we don't know this country's going to hell in a handbasket, and they admit the veterans are the number one enemy, and they got spy networks. That's all admitted. They're harassing veterans, you name it. But, oh, it doesn't exist. Dad, I know you didn't want to tell me the whole story because it's patient, you know, doctor privilege, but you're allowed to say, as a dentist, what happened? Is it true that this person that's been your patient for a very long time wanted to hire you to be a minion, and then you went and talked to other dentists and found out they'd been visited by other groups?
Well, let me explain. I had actually was doing some consulting in Dallas at the time, and I was passing through Waco, and I heard a local police liaison in Waco talking about how that people could volunteer and it could be a career path toward really good employment for kids in high school and people in their neighborhoods and all different levels. And it was literally about becoming a volunteer part of an intelligence gathering, keep your neighborhood safe volunteer type program. And it was going on, and it was real interesting to me because about that same time, someone had approached Dr. King in his neighborhood about being involved in doing that. Sorry, in other words, see something, say something, keep your neighbors.
I know, but tell us what happened to you.
I basically was just approached by a patient that was involved in law enforcement that had said that, you know, they would like for me to be involved in basically just being aware of what was going on and to talk to other doctors and things in our organization that we were in a good position to...
Hey, now that we've started this, we got Tom Woods coming on, but stay there, Dad. We'll...
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I've been taking calls for 2 hours, and I'm doing a lot better than I normally do, and it's been pretty powerful hearing whistleblowers about InfraGuard spying on people and things. And we opened up our internal phone lines as well and never got to that phone bank. Scott, Chuck, Lion, Hart, Blake, I'm going to get to you guys with Tom Woods because you've been patient. If not, you can hang up. I know we got loaded phone lines over here. We've got whistleblowers on InfraGuard pouring in. This is crazy. I mean, this subject is big. Now, InfraGuard, guys, type it into Google and show people or startpage.com. Just type in InfraGuard. The FBI admits they have it. They have clergy response teams. We covered it when it was still secret. And it's getting preachers to spy on their flocks to try to influence them to accept gun confiscation, you name it. I've played newscasts where they admit it. And then this caller calls in and says, I disagree. You know, I want to hear your dad say that he got approached to be part of the See Something, Say Something and invited to meetings and things. And then my dad talked to other dentists and found out they'd been visited by other groups at home. And this is on record. They count on you being ignorant. They'll have these community FBI meetings. You go to them. It's not about Al-Qaeda. It's about the veteran next door. That's in the news. So my point is, and this was a year and a half ago now, my dad ended up calling into the back line and getting on, is that my dad suddenly heard ads on the radio about it. Dentist he knew it happened to, and then it happened to him. He can't tell the whole story because of patient doctor privilege. My dad's a dentist. But, Dad, I got to go to our guest here, and I appreciate you listening to the show. I didn't know you were listening when the guy called in. So just briefly, you know, the guy was implying, and I was making this up, you know, the TSA isn't sticking their hands down our pants either. Break down your concern and what went on without violating in fact, just tell the stories of the other doctors. That's that getting visited at home. That's
well,
better.
Basically, it was all a cumulative effect from having heard things on the radio mentioning it to people. And then just out of the blue, someone who'd been a patient for a long time, it was a fairly senior person involved in administration and law enforcement, had said, we're organizing community-level things whereby people are volunteering to go out in their neighborhoods and see what are happening. And what we've found that teachers and doctors and certain other people, bankers, have key positions where they can see and understand things that are going on that we need to know. And, you know, I could use your help in on an administrative level. And we're creating career paths for a lot of people at all different ages, young people, people in high school, people in college, and people that are senior people in their professions. And right now it's in an organizational state, but it could develop into something much more involved.
Yeah, and now Dad, I think you're conflating like several stories here because I know you don't listen all the time, but there was also the other individual, and I know you can't, that also came and flashed his little badge and things and was talking about something else.
Well, I've had several people approach me over time. I didn't know which incident you were talking about. This was about the time after I'd gone to through Waco and heard of a very similar community program. But
yeah, though there was one guy wanted you to watch your patients as well.
Well, no, this was the whole thing, that's the whole point, is that if you're in a situation of interviewing people and talking to people and being in positions of trust and things like that. But I think more than anything, they were interested in me basically doing some monitoring of charting issues and things on a general basis, but it didn't get so detailed because I was not interested in it. So it kind of.
But then you found out that other dentists were getting visits at home.
Yes, I found out that a very high percentage of them were.
Okay, so there you go. All right, Dad, thank you so much. Just briefly, while you're here, and Tom Woods is patiently holding, best-selling author. I keep meaning to get you on air because I only promote things. You know, I wasn't promoting the longevity insurance cards because I just wasn't sure about them, hadn't used them. I've now gotten a few prescriptions in the last year. Took that long to actually get a few prescriptions. I don't, you know, get them a lot, as you know. The nasal spray and then some stuff for my kids. We saved over 30% each time with them. They're totally free. You can just put in basically whatever name you want, and it accesses the discount. You, though, have given out thousands of these now. You know, you manage 14 dental offices. What type of responses with the InfoWars RX since the guy called in and said we were making this up? Now that we have you on air about this, let's do a evil capitalism plug.
I will just say that I have even started having patients that have insurance use them. For example, I have a patient who uses a prescription for, let's just say, creating younger skin. It's basically retinoic acid, and she was able to get the meds cheaper using the discount card than it would be on her insurance.
Yeah, so again,
it's an expensive item.
Again, you've been now in the last 6 months using it. I was never going to promote it because I couldn't understand it. It sounded too good to be true. And then you were telling me, hey, this is what's really hot. Because you bought a bunch.
It's a great value. I just basically give them away for free, and people, anybody. And at first I was saying, use this if you don't have insurance, but people were telling me. In fact, I heard one of your pharmacy people online talking about how sometimes that you can buy stuff generic cheaper without using insurance than you do with it because the volume pricing is so low if you're buying, say, 3 months, 6 months, or a year supply rather than paying the copay.
But this doesn't even access... generic stuff for bulk buying. This is across the board. Find out at InfoWarsRx.com. Dad, thank you for joining us.
All righty. Have a great day.
Hey, there he goes. Okay, punk. Good try calling in, implying that isn't going on. Counting on listeners being ignorant, not knowing InfraGuard is real. There you go. Okay, now I apologize to our guest. We are going to shift gears now. Joining us via video Skype, if you're a PrisonPlanet.tv viewer, or if you're listening on XM166 out there, Thomas E. Woods, Jr. is a senior fellow at the Ludwig von Mises Institute and creator of the Tom Woods Liberty Classroom. Oh, that sounds evil right there. You probably have InfraGuard watch him. He holds a bachelor's degree in history from Harvard, and his master's is, and it just goes on, and a PhD from Columbia University. He is the author of 11 books, most recently Rollback, Repealing Big Government Before the Coming Financial Collapse, Nullification, How to Resist Federal Tyranny in the 21st Century. Woods has been edited and written the introduction to 5 additional books, and I just always enjoy hearing him when he's a guest on the radio or on TV, tomwoods.com. And thank you for holding the last 5 minutes while my dad was on. What is your take briefly of the Stasi state, the InfraGuard, the clergy response teams, Homeland Security saying veterans are the number one terror threat?
Well, it's really something. I mean, of course, we had the case of somebody being incarcerated because of some Facebook posts, for heaven's sake. And it seems to me we cannot hit this hard enough. Now, on the other hand, there are two things that I note about all this. On the one hand, technology is being exploited by the bad guys to go after the rest of us. But on the other hand, there are ways in which we can use technology to fight back against them. And one silver lining as we're watching this sort of police state develop is that today, you know, people have got smartphones and they can record these incidents with the police very easily and discreetly. And before you know it, they're all over YouTube, and things that the authorities might have been able to get away with in the past, suddenly they're on the defensive. So I'm still cautiously optimistic. We've still got some weapons in our arsenal here.
But now the feds want to be able to hit a code citywide and kill all the cameras on the iPhones and Droids. Did you see that?
I didn't see that. I'm hopeful that there's got to be some entrepreneur somewhere who figures out a way around that in the same way that, you know, they try to do the same thing to radar detectors, and there are always ways around it. My hope is that a free people that actually cares about his freedom will always be one step ahead.
Well, I agree with you, but why are we letting the government say we're going to hit a button and broadcast a code to turn your camera off without a warrant, without anything, controlling your property? It's incredible.
That's true. Of course, we're not letting them. They're doing it regardless of how we feel. And it just goes to show how frustrating it is. I'm sure you feel the same way. When I see people get really passionate in a presidential election year for a candidate other than Ron Paul, I feel like you just haven't woken up yet. There obviously isn't going to be a change between Romney and Obama. And the fact that people are going to see this Dinesh D'Souza movie and walking out saying, I got to clamp down, I got to do everything I can to get establishment candidate A out so I can replace him with establishment candidate B. If only these people's efforts were directed in the right place, we might be getting somewhere.
I'm glad you brought that film up. I mean, it was at about an eighth grade level instead of a second grade level, like most, you know, Democratic films are. But it's honest that government wants to destroy America, but that's to consolidate it. It's really colonialism by the globalist and crony capitalist against America. It's not Obama is anti-colonialist, so he's misguided. Obama's a total globalist like Romney.
Yeah, that's, of course that's right. Obama is, first of all, Obama's not a Marxist. He doesn't hold most of the Marxist views, but in a way that makes him more sinister and more dangerous. He doesn't want to end American imperialism or any of the old Marxist slogans. He wants to intensify them, as does Romney. And in terms of surveillance and all the other issues, the two people are indistinguishable.
He's bringing imperialism home.
You know, what I want to do is one of these days I'm going to make a video when it gets time for the presidential debates, a video of the top 10 questions that will not be asked of these people, because if you did ask it, it would expose the scam of the so-called free elections that we have.
Well, Tom, you know, I tell you, an hour is not enough time. We got you on about 10 minutes late. We're going to go to break here and come back. I'm going to give you the floor. What do you want to get into first? Solutions, I was told.
Well, sure, we might as well try, right? Can't hurt to try. And we can't be afraid of failing, because how could we be in a worse spot than we are now?
That's a good point. And, you know, you've predicted the collapse and you've talked about ways to get the word out before that happens. Now it's here. I want to talk about your last two books. I've read both of them. Amazing information. And again, we're honored to have you here today with us. Ladies and gentlemen, you can visit his website, tomwoods.com. We've got a link to it up at infowars.com and prisonplanet.tv. Again, I apologize for having my dad on kind of like that. He's never been on the show before. I think a couple times he's called in over the last 17 years, but a guy called in going, "Your dad, I want to hear him claim the government tried to recruit him to spy on his patients." And my dad didn't tell you the half of it, okay? Okay, like I'm, you know, kind of a wild guy. My dad's kind of the opposite, real calm, and he didn't tell you half of it, okay? We'll be right back. Stay with us. Tom Woods is our guest. This is a short segment, long segment coming up. I think this is our first visit with him over the years, hopefully the first of many. Tom, what are solutions to this fight? I mean, Ron Paul's still out there getting the word out, but he's riding off in the sunset a little bit. Rand's up there, you know, close to his dad, but not his dad. Obviously, those are focal points. There's what you're doing with Lou Rockwell and others doing a great job. I know that you're in a film that we promote and sell, Nullification, which breaks down states' rights. And when I go study what the Pentagon's doing, they're not preparing to fight al-Qaeda. They talk about going after legislatures that rebel and don't go along. So the corrupt system is worried about states' rights. That tells me it's the answer. Tell us about that.
Well, my view is that we have to try something that's not out of the New York Times playbook. I mean, the New York Times and the mainstream media, their role is to try to limit our range of debate, is to say, well, here are the issues that you're allowed to talk about. Here are the positions. Here's the 3-inch range you're allowed to take on those issues. And if we're going to play by their rules, we're never going to get anywhere. So we've got to be willing to do things that aren't mentioned in Newsweek or aren't mentioned on the TV. And so that's why I like the idea of state nullification. I wrote a book called Nullification, as you mentioned. And the idea of this is that the states created the federal government. They ought to have some say in whether the federal government is obeying the Constitution or not, saying what their opinion on that is. And in fact, as Madison and Jefferson said in 1798, the states in the last resort have to say to the federal government, no, what you're doing is unconstitutional, we refuse to go along with it. Now, that is, needless to say, not in the Romney agenda, it's not in the Obama agenda, it's not what Chris Matthews would say, it's not what Bill O'Reilly would say. So in my book, that makes it great. So basically, you've got all the corrupt, as Mike Church calls them, the Decepticons on the one side, and you got Thomas Jefferson on the other. I'll take Thomas Jefferson and state nullification. We're starting to see this picking up steam around the country as people feel like, you know, I've voted for the candidates, I've handed out pocket constitutions, I've done everything else, I'm going to try this. If it's good enough for Thomas Jefferson, it's good enough for me. What is the harm in trying it? And I'll tell you, there's a lot of fun in trying it, because when you see the look on the face of Rachel Maddow and Chris Matthews when they talk about the reappearance of state nullification, it's like their dog died. This is not something they want us doing.
By the way, you have absolutely hit the heart of it. They control the debates between the Demo-rats and the Decepticons. They sit there and give you this false tiny spectrum. And my seven-year-old daughter was in the back of the car, and she goes, well, Daddy, are we Democrats or Republicans? And my nine-year-old son said, no, that's a false choice, because he listens to the show more, and said, that's, you know, how they control us. You know, we need more choices. And I was like, amen to that. And, you know, she started to get it. I'm like, they give you false choices, and they're scared because they're losing control of the narrative now. They can't keep us on the reservation.
Absolutely. So, of course, when you do pursue something like state nullification, as some states have been talking about with a variety of pieces of federal legislation, naturally the state is going to come out with all the guns, rhetorical guns, at least at this stage, that they have. Namely, they're going to accuse you of, well, of course, you're an extremist, a word they never define, of course. There's nothing extreme about what they do, you understand. I'm extreme, not them.
They call it sedition. They call it sedition to even want to have a state.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, sedition, that's right. Of course, the irony, well, there's a lot of irony here, but I hardly think it's sedition to support Thomas Jefferson. So I always point that out. They never want to talk about Jefferson. But the long and the short of it is, we're just reclaiming what are obviously our American rights. And in the nullification book, the whole reason I wrote it was that I knew we were going to be attacked and smeared. We support slavery and all this nonsense. Nullification was never used to uphold slavery. It was used to fight against the fugitive slave laws. They don't want us to know that because they want to paint us as these terrible people who pine for slavery.
That's right.
And all
they use, for those that don't know, states' rights so that people could run and be safe.
That's exactly what was going on in Wisconsin and elsewhere. And they said, we have to protect our state sovereignty, our right to protect these poor souls and give them a jury trial and not have them just be dragged away to their masters. That's history that we're not supposed to know. We're supposed to know that the states are wicked. The federal government is this great, wonderful, progressive force. And we are blasting that narrative to bits with nullification.
Keep telling us about it.
Well, when you said short break, a short segment, long segment, I figured I want to give you a chance to jump in and stop me.
Well, we're going to break in about a minute. It's just that that is the answer. When you read the John Warner Defense Authorization Act, when you look, you saw when Texas unanimously in the House said, we're going to enforce the law, don't grope people at the airport. Right. Misdemeanor on the outside, felony on the inside. That's just the law. They threatened F-16 armed blockade. And it wasn't even big news. It's like, oh, well, our F-16s will stop you from enforcing that. I mean, the state should have called that bluff. I want to come back and get your take on that and then just keep expanding, because we sell the DVD that's based on your book. To a great extent, you're in the DVD. In fact, I'll show it to people. It's at InfoWarsStore.com. Get it. Get it to your county commissioners and others. We're seeing more and more legislatures, counties, and sheriffs getting this. We'll be back with Tom Wood.
This is our land. These are our people. The workers. The strivers. The builders. These are our people. Who are they? They are the dark armies. The dark, murdering armies whose only honor is atrocity.
The answer to 1984 is 1776. You're listening to The Alex Jones Show.
We are go. Tom Woods, best-selling authors, our guest. The documentary film Nullification, The Rightful Remedy. A documentary film is so professionally done. Whensoever the general government assumes undelegated powers, a nullification of the act is the rightful remedy. Thomas Jefferson. And again, ladies and gentlemen, people can get this powerful film at InfoWarsStore.com. And Tom Woods has a book of the same name. He's in it. Stuart Rhodes and so many others. It's really an amazing film. Nullify Now. Because the federal government itself has been taken over. And I want to get into that subject right now with our guest. But there's also a dark side type of nullification. When Congress won't do things that are unconstitutional, like pass carbon taxes, Obama just does it via executive order. So the federal government itself, as they've bragged on CNBC, has been captured by these offshore globalists that are above the law and fat on bailout money. Here's an article out of the local news. Elgin Sustainability Visioning Workshop set for September 10th. That's here in Elgin outside Austin. It's a cow town. And they say they want to take over the local land, decide who can develop. And they put it out there like it's a wonderful new thing. That's what the UN said 3 years ago at the Copenhagen Treaty. They said, we can't take over the federal government fully. We'll take over at the city and county and state level. And Schwarzenegger leads that initiative. So they understand the real power is local. That's why they say think globally, act locally. So they don't want us doing that. They're like, oh, no, let's have 60% turnouts for a federal election, but 8% on average for local. So everybody get out to Elgin tonight. We'll give you that at the very end of the show. But these meetings are happening everywhere. Where, hi, you want to have a livable area? Pass a law that bureaucrats decide if you can use your land at all. You know, forget fish and wildlife, saying you have a puddle on your land that you've owned for 100 years. Now we're going to take it. Now just pass a law because it's trendy. You know, we're going to shut down your coal power plant because it's trendy. Going back to Tom Woods. Tom, getting into the issue of what the feds are doing and how they themselves have been taken over. We ended the last segment bringing up the point about Texas threatened with F-16s to not let aircraft come into our state. If we dared to not let TSA, who aren't even police, stick their hands down our pants.
Well, my own recommendation for this is that as we go forward and as we gain more and more interest in the idea of nullification is that we need to coordinate. We need to have friendly legislators in one state coordinating with legislators in other states. And we do have legislators around the country who are on board for nullification. I know that for a fact. I know a lot of them. And have the states do this all at the same time. And then really, I mean, of course, the federal government has overwhelming power. It could, strictly speaking, do whatever it wants. But it does have to reckon with public opinion at some level. It does not want the general public to withdraw its consent entirely. So I'd like to say, what if 15 states refuse to do something at once, or 20 or 25? What are they going to do, withhold the highway money from everybody? And at some point, they have got to back down, which they have done in the past. They backed down on Real ID, although now they're trying to get that back.
They backed down on 55 miles an hour. All we have to have is a collective, this is wrong, you shouldn't be over this, and a Sammy Hagar song, we've got to make it culturally popular to rediscover liberty.
Yeah, absolutely. And the fact that, I mean, you could sort of play on, you sort of do what I used to do when I was a college professor. I'd have all these 18-year-old kids, and they weren't all that excited about being in my class. I don't know why, but they weren't. And so one of the ways I would get them excited is I would say, look, I'm going to teach you stuff in this room that if you went to Harvard, they would not tell you. And then suddenly their teenage rebellious nature, I was using it for my purposes. So suddenly, because they want to know, well, what are they keeping from me? Well, likewise, nullification and the sorts of things we're doing are the sorts of things that we are not supposed to do. No authority wants us to do them. That sort of makes them cool. I mean, in the old days, the left used to say, question authority. Now the left is the authority half the time. So they have no use for questions anymore. We are the question askers, and we're the ones, and I'll give you the answer. The answer is nullification. It's not the answer to every problem. But what it does, even if it fails, which I don't think it will, but even if it did, it succeeds in getting people to think outside this suffocating box.
Yes.
Like the only opinion you can have is between Joe Biden and Mitt Romney. That's just that's a mental disease.
Exactly. But I mean, what you just said is so true. They lie awake at night afraid of nullification because the states created the federal government and the two are supposed to be a separation of powers. And the federal government has become this distant imperium, just like England became a distant imperium and the city of London from the 13 colonies. And you read what's in the Declaration of Independence. It's exactly what's happening today and then some. Things are worse today than they were then. And like you said, so-called liberals aren't liberals. They are authoritarians.
Absolutely.
They They always want to tell us, well, a nine-month-old baby in the womb's not a baby. We say it's a fetus. You know, everything with them is they define everything, and it's so pretentious, and it's a mind game. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, not at all. I agree with everything you've said. On the nullification issue, Jefferson predicted this outcome, and he warned, he said, if you let the federal government have the final monopolistic word on what the Constitution means, take a wild guess on what will happen. It's going to interpret it in ways that benefit itself and in ways that eclipse the states and the people. Well, obviously, that has happened. Now, the argument for nullification, constitutionally, morally, every other way, is such a home run. I know this because I've had exchanges with law professors on it. These law professors can't debate their way out of a paper bag. They've all have the same three rotten arguments. So I got so sick of answering the same things over and over again. I bought the domain name statenullification.com, and I basically put up there all the information you need to beat even a law professor, because they don't have the arguments. It is true that Jefferson said these things. It is true that the states created the federal government. All these things are true, that the Constitution was ratified state by state, that the United States in the Constitution is never referred to in the singular. The United States is always
just 30 years ago, the FBI had to get permission to come in your town. Now the police get little federal cards and other toadies. And why do we even have states then? Why do we even have an America? Why not just a global government? Well, that's why they have to get rid of the states to then get rid of the sovereignty itself of the country.
Right, exactly. The states are not just, you know, cute little, you know, arbitrary boundary lines. And, you know, Vermont has some quirks and California has its quirks. And isn't that neat? These are supposed to be boundary lines against tyranny. That's why they're there.
Firewalls.
They're not there for convenience for the government. They're not there for fun. They're there for this purpose. If we're not going to use them, you're right. We might as well not have them.
Well, they're firewalls. Aren't they like bulkheads in a ship? I mean, if one falls, people can run to the other.
Oh, and absolutely. And in fact, what's so awesome is that in the early 19th century, so 200 years ago, the governor of Connecticut, what? A northern state? Yes, that's right. The governor of Connecticut, Jonathan Trumbull, said that the state governments are in the last resort, the bulwark of the liberties of the people. And so in 2010, in Connecticut, the very same state, 200 years later, there was an attorney general race. And the woman who was running as the Republican got in the debates, picked up my book, Nullification, which quotes the old Connecticut governor 200 years ago. And she quoted from it and said, we need to do this again. Well, of course, the media just went absolutely berserk. She's not staying between the Biden and Romney spectrum. How dare she say these things? It's exciting that we have all this history, real U.S. history, that is not taught. And I don't think it's not taught just because by accident or they didn't have time to get to it that day. It's because if you don't teach it, it's easier to pass off this narrative whereby in American history, all we have is the great, glorious, progressive federal government always doing wondrous deeds for the people. That's what they want us to take, so that we'll sit back and not ask them questions.
Where do you see this confrontation going? Because clearly the federal government's buying 1.4 billion bullets. The lapdog media spins that into 174,000 and says, why are you guys upset? When they're setting up checkpoints, TSA on the streets, 1.4 billion bullets, and they spin it to 174,000, when they are federalizing everything, NDAA, Patriot Act, face scanning cameras going into buy and sell, out of a science fiction dystopia, and then they still look at us and go, "You're the crazy people that say the government's too big," or you know, the Southern Poverty Law Center and ADL are like dangerous terrorists. Think there's a world government as it's being announced everywhere. I mean, it's. I don't think they understand, or do they, that they're really losing the hearts and minds right now, and shoveling more disinfo is only making people's exodus from under their dark wings accelerate.
I think so. I mean, the fact that, as Lou Rockwell said at the Paul Festival, I don't think there's a 25-year-old in this country, a 25 or under, who still reads a newspaper. So, in other words, the usual mechanisms that they once used to manufacture consent no longer exist as far as most young people are concerned. And then, of course, we all know how Ron Paul did among the young people. Gary Johnson, who's not quite Ron Paul, but nevertheless he represents some kind of a difference, is doing much better among the younger people. So, although time is not really on our side in some ways, Well, in other ways, at least we see that the young people who haven't been raised on a diet of you listen to the three channels and you accept what they say are willing to look elsewhere for their information because they know liars when they see them. Well, that encourages me. But we also, as you're right, we've got to talk about the local level because maybe at this point, I mean, Ron Paul did us a great service, educational service on the national level, and I don't know what we would have done without that. But moving forward, we got to think about the local level and what you can do as an individual. Like New Hampshire is a great example. They passed a jury nullification law so that juries can not only decide whether the person was guilty or innocent, but also decide the justice of the law. The Free State Project in New Hampshire is trying to encourage a free society by just having people go to one place, New Hampshire, and working together to build a free society. Now, unfortunately, my old state of Massachusetts, which I'm sorry, I apologize, I'm from Massachusetts, is screwing that up because so many people in Massachusetts, they screw up Massachusetts. They have no idea why Massachusetts is screwed up. They have no idea that they did it. And then they move to New Hampshire. They want to screw up New Hampshire. So they've got their hands full up there. But these are the sorts of things that liberty-minded people creatively are coming up with when they're faced with what seems like insuperable odds. They're just saying, well, you know what? It may be insuperable odds, but I'm going to go down fighting, you know, and maybe we just might win.
Look at California. I mean, they passed a 20% carbon tax a couple years ago, knowing that when you raise taxes too much, it actually destroys the tax receipts. And now the exodus has accelerated. And then their answer is raise taxes again. There is this predatory instinct to the bureaucrat and the bureaucrat minions and also these kleptocrat mega corporations that love working with big government to shut down their competition. I was reading where Walmart now, you know, has much lower profits. Well, what do they expect when they engage in anti-free market monopolistic tactics and then try to frame the free market for a monopoly they've created that's the opposite of that?
Well, there's also this move to try to get a national sales tax on the internet, and there are some merchants who would like to see that happen because they feel like that would help them against local competitors and so on. Everybody winds up trying to use the government to line his pockets, which is why, see, unfortunately, in the mainstream media, the way they respond to that is say, well, we got to take the money out of politics. Now, you got to take the power out of Washington because you're never going to be able to get the money out as long as there's stuff to be had. The crooks will always figure out how to get their grubby hands on it. So you have to go after the source of the problem, which is not that too much money is being donated to campaigns. It's that once elected, the president can favor you. We don't want that.
Well, that's like the more money they spend on education, the more expensive it gets, the lower the quality. The more money you spend on health, then the higher the cost and the less quality because it's all being centrally controlled. You cut the money off, then that will start cutting the corruption off.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the education bureaucracy is a disaster and a joke. I mean, the administration is so bloated in all these cities. In New York City, it's something like 6,000 bureaucrats in the central office, whereas the Catholic schools educate like 1/6 as many students, so they should have 1,000 bureaucrats. They've got 26. I mean, it goes to show there's something wrong here. This is not a matter of, I just said this on C-SPAN the other day, this is not a matter of the government is there because these are wonderful, public-spirited people who just want to promote the common good. No, these are people who want to loot and expropriate you and build up their own impenetrable fiefdoms where they increase their budgets and their power. That's what it is. It's not what you learned in third grade about how the government works. That's the reality of what's going on.
Well, look at this example of where the people end up in the safety deposit box having coins worth $7.9 million apiece, these St. Gaudens 33, and the government said, well, we have an executive order that we can take your gold, and they just steal it. And then ABC News reports it like it's a good thing. I mean, Don't people understand that once due process, the Constitution and Bill of Rights is gone, none of us have any protections? Don't the bureaucrats know that they can be looted now? I mean, you know, don't the cops know that once there's not a Bill of Rights and Constitution, that they have no protections?
Well, that's why I think it's important. There's been some good educational work done to try to reach local police and educate them and make them alert to what's going on. A lot of them are they feel like they're just doing their jobs and they're not really aware of the implications of all this. So that does need to be promoted. But the long and the short of it is what we're seeing though today at the same time. I mean, I think we've got two things going on at once. On the one hand, the acceleration of trends that are deeply disturbing and dangerous for all of us. But on the other hand, we have more people than ever who are becoming alert to this and are becoming interested in alternative sources of opinion, and that's all to the good. And so, like, for instance, September 22nd, I'm told there's a big nationwide and the Fed rally at all the different Federal Reserve banks. Now, for me, most of the time, I feel like a lot of these demonstrations don't really do much, but I make an exception for this, because the very fact that there's a demonstration outside a Federal Reserve bank makes people realize the Federal Reserve is something people actually have an opinion about.
And it makes them start realizing, hey, it's private, and hey, we're not just going to protest the puppet Republicans and Democrats. We're going to go directly to the real puppeteer.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. Because, again, establishment candidate A versus establishment candidate B isn't going to change anything. These people none of them are going to dismantle the Federal Reserve. That's their bread and butter. None of them are going to do any of these things. So we have to go directly, to the public and say, what is the thing, the most important institution that is privileged by the government, namely the Federal Reserve, that you never hear about, or if you do talk about it, you are dismissed from polite society? Why is that? Why do you think it is that we're not supposed to talk about this? Again, arouse people's curiosity. That can't hurt. Now, I don't know in the end game of all this how this turns out, if we necessarily win. Maybe we win, maybe we don't win.
Well, resistance is victory. The level of tyranny we'll live under is what we put up with, as Jefferson said. I want to come back and talk about how we counter all of this. But bottom line, people are really starting to wake up, as you were saying, and as things get worse and worse, that will only get other people to wake up. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Decided we were all going to drive 55, and the people said we're not putting up with it. And it took 20 years, but now they're raising the speed limit up to 85 in Texas. Hey, the Germans can drive 150. A lot of the studies show that you get places quicker and there's actually less accidents, but you better not be texting while you're driving. The point is, the reason I wanted to play a little clip of that is that it's an example of people just saying no. And culturally getting what's happening. Abortion's becoming incredibly unpopular. Gun control's becoming incredibly unpopular. Because people are just waking up and figuring out, hey, you don't want my guns to protect me. You want to make me your slave. And that's what's happening. Tom Woods is our guest, best-selling author, researcher. He's also been awarded Humanities Studies Fellowships. And he's taught at universities. I'm not going to go over the whole deal, but he has written the book, Nullification. We sell the DVD that he's in that is incredibly powerful, Nullification, InfoWarsStore.com. Hope you get it today. We've got about 5 minutes left. Look, I mean, I mentioned this. You've got the UN and globalists taking over with sustainable development and all the rest of it in towns everywhere because no one's resisting them. They understand the power of the local. And so I tell listeners, just get out there with the truth and get in these parasites' face. And they'll act like you're powerless up front. That's a mind game. The truth is, they're powerless. Tom Woods.
Well, that's absolutely right. And as you said earlier, the turnouts for these local elections are basically negligible. So this is, I mean, talk about low-hanging fruit. Forget about trying to run for Congress or something when you could get in the state Senate without all that much difficulty. And a lot of good liberty-minded people will rally around you, and you don't need a gigantic budget. But if you are remotely charismatic and you know your stuff, then you can actually stop these people. Because really, these people, they prosper in the darkness. They prosper by keeping their intentions quiet or off the table or masking them with cutesy, saccharine-sounding language about the children and future generations, whatever. But they need that benign mask ripped off their faces by somebody who's knowledgeable and, frankly, who can laugh at them. Humor is so important because these people like to be treated with deadly earnest. And for us just to treat them as just laughable nobodies just gets under their skin. And to me, it's not enough to fight them. I want to get under their skin.
You know, it's funny. I didn't understand that till a few years ago, 17 years on air, that they will ban our videos and file false claims on them when I make fun of a professor saying reduce humanity or I make fun of the TSA. They do not like us laughing at them. You're right.
Yeah. So, I mean, basically, everybody's got to do what he's got to do. And I know, you know, you have a huge audience and a lot of your audience feels like I'm already doing everything I can do. But maybe not everybody. Maybe you should be writing a blog or something instead of emailing 50 of your friends your thoughts all the time. Share your thoughts with the world.
Start doing YouTube videos. Start doing local access. Put out a local newspaper. Put out a newsletter at work. Just start talking.
Whatever. Yeah. Read a book with your friends. Something. But I mean, we have an opportunity that hasn't been seen since Gutenberg to spread information. And if we don't take it, we have only ourselves.
And that's why Obama now says the cybersecurity executive order to shut down free speech. He's now saying an executive order. Congress wouldn't do what he wanted.
Well, the executive order thing, I mean, we could do a whole show on that, but that is just so egregiously unconstitutional, but neither party will actually stop it. As long as my party's president is doing it, it's okay.
All right, Tom Woods, we're out of time. Will you come back and visit us soon?
Be glad to.
All right, amazing. TomWoods.com. I'm Alex Jones of Infowars.com. In closing for this hour, 6:30 p.m. tonight, Elgin High School, they're having a sustainability UN visioning workshop to brainwash the locals to literally go into bondage. If you're in Central Texas, be out there 6:30 tonight.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist who's been in a lot of serious war zones and reported on some of the biggest stories of our time is a Pulitzer Prize winner. He is Chris Hedges, and the website's truthdig.com. He has a new book out that we're going to be breaking down with him today, Days of Destruction, What Days of Revolt. I can't wait to read it. And he's saying, is revolt all we have left? Well, yeah, there are many forms of revolt. I mean, I went into, you know, basically a preaching fit last hour, but it's effective. It shows my desperation. It's almost like my ghost dance here, wishing that we weren't going into such a fascist, corporatist tyranny. But Chris Hedges joins us, one of the few real liberal voices that you can say is respectable and really makes sense and who doesn't compromise. It's very scary to see none of the main conservatives against torture, secret war, the end of the Bill of Rights, and really hardly any liberals. In fact, a lot of them love it because it's empowering their precious state that they don't understand is now a corporate instrument. Chris, we're about to go to break here in a few minutes, but I didn't want to waste any time getting you on. Great to have you here, sir. Tell us a little bit about the new book.
Well, it goes to the sacrifice zones, the poorest pockets of the country that have been forced to kneel before unfettered corporate capitalism, and it's a kind of warning because they went first and we're next as we allow these corporate forces to reconfigure the country into a form of neo-feudalism, an oligarchic state backed by, you know, the most intrusive security surveillance apparatus probably in the history of humankind. And I speak as somebody who covered the fall of East Germany. I'm very familiar with the Stasi state. There are no impediments left. So, you know, it looks at places like Camden, New Jersey, which per capita is the poorest city in the United States. Not surprisingly, also one of the most dangerous. Pine Ridge, South Dakota, Lakota Indian Reservation, where the average life expectancy for a male is 48. That is the lowest in the Western Hemisphere outside of Haiti. The coal fields of southern West Virginia, one of the most minerally rich pockets of the United States, and yet, of course, harbors the poorest population, along with the terrible ecological devastation, and finally the produce fields, where these undocumented workers, who are the perfect worker in the eyes of the corporate state because they have no legal rights, they can be abused, there are no benefits, They work day by day. They show up in collection centers. When they don't have enough work, they sleep out literally under mango trees in Florida. And then we finally end with the Occupy movement, which is, again, you know, with the title of the book, Days of Destruction, Days of Revolt. That first bubbling, I think, of consciousness, of revolt, of a recognition that we have undergone a corporate coup d'etat in slow motion, and it's over. Citizens United probably nailed the last peg in the coffin. And civil disobedience is, I think, all we have left.
Now, we're going to go to break here in a moment and come back and get into your case against the NDAA and all the amazing work you're engaged in. And just some of the signposts that we see showing that this, from my view, has been a conscious, Rand Corporation talked about it 15 years ago, construction of a system designed to implode the economy under a feudal system, as you said, using poverty as political control. Because you can say what you want about America and what it's done the last 100 years, but even in the 40s, 50s, 60s, there was a plan to build up the third world and stuff. Now it is... No, make everybody poor and have private cities the elites live in. I mean, it's such an evil Malthusian view. I want to get your well-traveled, you know, expert view on this from your perspective and talk about the book straight ahead after this break. Amazing interview coming up with Chris Hedges, truthdig.com. We'll tell you more about the book, Days of Destruction, Days of Revolt. I'm Alex Jones with InfoWars.com.
You are either with the Republic or against it. Resistance to tyrants is obedience to God. It's Alex Jones.
That's right, and it was Thomas Jefferson that said resistance to tyrants is obedience to God. Many other founders said similar things. But the point is that we are going into a classical tyranny. No one can deny it. The NSA has been caught spying on everyone in live time, totally illegal. They're arresting people, torturing them, torturing their children in front of them in Abu Ghraib. Bush brags about it in his book and doesn't get in trouble, even though his minions went to jail. And now Obama has accelerated it, and Romney signals he's going to accelerate it. We're in deep trouble. We've got a amazing guest joining us, Pulitzer Prize winning journalist who has covered, you name it, the Stasi, the Russians, and many tyrannies. He's been in high-level, you know, coverage of negotiations all over the Middle East, and he sued earlier this year over the NDAA that Obama signed on December 31st when he thought no one was paying attention, 2011. He has a new book just out, Days of Destruction, Days of Revolt. We're going to talk about that. We've only got him to the bottom of the hour. He's, again, gracious to join us, a very busy man. And I want to talk about his NDAA suit that's having some success. I want to get his take on everything that's unfolding. But now we have activists put on terror watch lists preventing protesting DNC. Turned out the Army, the ACLU, here's the ACLU press release just out yesterday on it. They got the document where the Army, DOD, did it. And they say in here that it's low-level terrorism to protest and asked the court to keep him in jail because protesting is now illegal. We are seeing, again, the FBI caught with 12 million IDs of folks with Apple computers. Here joining us to break it down is Chris Hedges, who I don't really need to go over more of his bio here. Most people know who he is or should know who he is. But he joins us now. Chris, what is the state of the world in your view?
Well, I think, you know, one of the things we have to be clear about is that the assault on civil liberties, which began under the Bush administration, has in fact been accelerated by the Obama administration. It's worse under Obama than under Bush. When you tick off all of the things that the Obama administration has done over the last 4 years, refusal to restore habeas corpus, interpretation of the 2001 Authorization to Use Military Force Act as giving the executive branch the right to assassinate American citizens, whatever you think of these figures, like Anwar al-Awlaki, the Yemeni cleric, and then, of course, his 16-year-old son, who was never accused of anything 2 weeks later. The FISA Amendment Act, which I'm one of the plaintiffs, but will be heard in the Supreme Court on October 29th, which retroactively made legal what under our Constitution has always been illegal, the warrantless wiretapping, monitoring, and eavesdropping of tens of millions of American citizens who have done nothing, been charged with no crime, and we know that all of our personal information is now being stored out in supercomputers in Utah. The Obama administration has also employed six times the Espionage Act, which was never designed to ferret out whistleblowers as they are using it. These are people who have exposed war crimes. In the case of the CIA official Sterling, who purportedly leaked this information to Jim Risen at the New York Times, he's used it to essentially shut down anything that counters the official government narrative. And I was an investigative reporter for the New York Times. I know many of the major investigative reporters, and they will tell you that at this point, investigating anything the government does has become impossible. Even on background briefings will no longer be given because people are scared of being charged with the Espionage Act, as six officials have been charged, which of course brings with it prison time. And that this brings us to the National Defense Authorization Act, which, as you mentioned, Alex, was signed by the president on December 31st, New Year's Eve, of course, a moment when he thought we weren't looking. Now, the National Defense Authorization Act, Section 1021, authorizes the U.S. government, or more specifically the executive branch, to condemn or label an American citizen a terrorist, and not only a terrorist, but in the language of that section, someone who is has relationships with what they call associated forces, a term that's never defined, to use the military. This is contravening 200 years of domestic law to detain these people, hold them in military facilities, strip them of due process, and if the military so determines, actually ship them to offshore penal colonies like Guantanamo and other black sites around the world, in the language of this section, until the end of hostilities, whenever that is. In an age of permanent war, that's a very long time. We challenged that in federal, in the Southern District Court of New York. Federal Judge Catherine Forrest issued a temporary injunction, in essence invalidating that section of the NDAA. We had a final hearing the beginning of August, and in which Judge Forrest will now determine whether that temporary injunction will become permanent. But we know how the Obama administration will respond if she invalidates that section of the NDA, which, of course, I think she should. They've already challenged the temporary injunction. They will clearly challenge the permanent injunction if she rules that it is unconstitutional, as it appears she will. That will take it to an appellate court. If they uphold the ruling, it will go to the Supreme Court. But all of this comes under the Obama administration. And my frustration with self-professed liberals is that, you know, they're entranced with the rhetoric of Obama and utterly ignore the facts, utterly ignore what he has done. And as you mentioned earlier, I think what we are seeing is, in essence, rewriting of the legal code to criminalize any form of legitimate dissent. And that's because the corporate state, corporate power understands very well what's coming, both in terms of the environmental crisis and the economic crisis, and they want the legal mechanisms to shut it down. You know, it's interesting that in the August, in the last hearing in Judge Forrest's courtroom, she, as the judge, actually brought up the detention of 110,000 Japanese Americans who, you know, because of their ethnicity, were sent to internment camps, again, without any kind of legal recourse, and said that this section of the NDA essentially sets that precedent.
We are now reaching the Alexander Solzhenitsyn-type moment, asking, will we burn later in the camps, wishing we'd done something? And now, 3 months ago, the Army document came out for re-education centers. The Army admitted in a press release that our document was real, but that we shouldn't have it. In another public document for gun confiscation during crises, they're buying armored vehicles. They've bought 1.4 billion rounds of ammo. The media spins it to say, hey, they need 174,000 rounds of ammo. No, it's $1.4 billion. So we're seeing all sorts of propaganda. Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative journalist who's covered police states worldwide, Chris Hedges, joins us. We're going to talk about his book here in a moment. We're going to skip this network break so we have more time with him. What is the ruling class thinking? Because we've always had different corrupt elites and things, but there was still an understanding, even for the ultra-wealthy and powerful, that you want checks and balances going back to Magna Carta, because other elites can come in and rob you, and that nobody wants to live in a society that's not free. I mean, free societies are more productive, they're happier, they're better. What has happened to the ruling class that they're going, I mean, the Stalin, Mao, Hitler route? I mean, this is, I mean, earlier in the shorter segment, I'd like you to recap that. You pointed out you've covered a lot of historical events that happened as they happened. This is one of the nastiest, most scientifically crafted, over the top. I mean, so many things that are in 1984 have now been surpassed, and now they're getting ready for the physical roundups. I don't think people understand, who haven't looked at history like you and others have, just how dark it is my point.
Yeah, I mean, in the language of patriotism, these people are traitors. And that's the difference, as you point out, between the older ruling elite. And I come out of the working class. They were certainly no friends to working men and women, frankly. But they cared about the sustenance of the nation. The new ruling elite is global. It, in the language of business, is quite willing to harvest the nation. That's how you've seen manufacturing jobs shipped overseas. And you look at labor conditions in southern China, where Apple products, I mean, all sorts of products that we buy are made, and it's out of Dickinsonian England. You know, 70-hour work weeks, abusive conditions, you know, no labor protection. And what they tell now workers around the world is that in order to be competitive, they have to be competitive, in essence, with prison labor in China or sweatshop workers in Bangladesh who make 22 cents an hour.
Exactly. Where Foxconn that Apple uses, well, we're being lectured by Al Gore here domestically, they have to put suicide nets up.
Yeah, you know, what happens is when they don't meet their quotas, and there's a good book by a Berkeley sociologist who's of Chinese origin, who went and wrote about it, wrote about these conditions. When they don't meet their quotas and they don't make the profits, there are workers who will work and actually not be paid. And at the end of the month, they will climb up to the roofs of these overcrowded dormitories and jump off and commit suicide. And that's the world that these corporations have created. I mean, and that's the difference between the old robber barons, the Rockefellers, the Mellons, the Carnegies, and the new robber barons, who are quite willing to sacrifice the nation, indeed are, for profit. When they do their speculative gambling on Wall Street, and their bubbles crash, they loot the U.S. Treasury, and then they make the rest of us pay for it through austerity programs. You see the same thing in Europe, because, of course, it's a global corporate movement, so that when Papandreou in Greece announces, okay, you want austerity, I'm going to put it to a referendum, he's gone within a week, and he's replaced with a banker technocrat that is essentially pliable and a puppet of the banks and of the corporate interests. This is a global phenomena. We're not exempt from it. And these essentially narrow oligarchic corporate forces, and we see it. You know, they make all their money here, and then they move overseas so they don't have to pay any taxes.
Well, they're moving to armored redoubts on Pacific Islands and admitting they are, and they're bragging that they're converting us to a tyranny and training the police that we're their enemy. I mean, this is a nightmare scenario, and the attitude is, Americans are uppity, we're going to bring you down, we're going to cut you down to size, while lecturing people who are on welfare because they've destroyed the jobs base, while they are the biggest recipients of corporate welfare contracts, bailouts. And then in Europe, I've looked at the numbers, almost all of the real debt is owed by the big zombie banks, and they've done this trick of convincing everyone that the Europeans are lazy, and now today they're reporting that they want Greeks to work six-day work weeks, and then most of the money is to be paid to the bankers that Greece is having to hand their islands over to.
Yeah, well, that's precisely it. And, you know, that they will, corporations know only one word, and that's more, and they are going to push and push and push. You know, like all sort of elites that have unplugged themselves from the reality around them. They're woefully out of touch with what most Americans are undergoing. And it is always the ruling elites that finally determine the parameters and configurations of revolt and rebellion. And, you know, they, because they have not responded rationally, as the columnist Paul Krugman writes week after week, to both the economic and political crisis, it means that there will be a backlash. What exactly it will look like, how it will appear, when it will appear, I don't know. I've covered, revolutions in Eastern Europe, uprisings in Palestine, the war in Yugoslavia. But I do know, especially having spent the last 2 years on this book, in the poorest pockets of the United States, without any question, that is coming.
And the establishment knows that and is making preparations for it, I think, to use that crisis as a pretext to grab even more power. If you expand on this out into the future, what type of world do you think the ultra-rich, who are obviously monopoly capitalists, what type of world are they planning on building?
In essence, a kind of feudal system where you have a tiny, filthy rich oligarchic elite, a small sort of core of corporate managers, public relations people, in essence, propagandists, and then the rest of us hanging on by our fingertips. And, you know, interestingly enough, this completely replicates the political and economic structure that Orwell painted in 1984 with Oceania, where you had an inner party of 2-4%, an outer party of about 12%, and the rest are what he calls proles. That's already, I mean, all you have to do is look out your window at a decaying infrastructure, closing schools, closing fire departments, closing libraries, long-term unemployment and underemployment, coupled with, you know, this kind of constant sustenance of criminal enterprise. I mean, look at Goldman Sachs. Goldman Sachs is bailed out every penny on the dollar by the American taxpayer, and now we give them, in essence, 0% interest loans so that they can gamble. I don't know what it is. It's not capitalism. I don't even know what to call it.
And then to loan it back to us at 10, 20, 30 or more percent.
Well, and they often don't loan. Talk to any small businessman. They can't get loans. I mean,
and why should the banks loan? They've got all the money they could ever want, taxpayer-backed money. Expanding on this, I went and saw Dinesh D'Souza's film, the 2016 Obama's America, and they were saying that Obama was anti-colonialist when really I see this as a new colonialism where it's these mega banks and mega elites that are destroying the nation states that were the old cores of the empire, not just exploiting the third world. They've brought the cancer home, but then they spin it that Obama is an anti-colonialist. And so that's why he's doing what he's doing. I mean, it's an amazing spin.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And, you know, we actually call the places that, you know, places like Camden internal colonies because it is a form of colonialism. And, you know, just to go back to your point earlier about the militarization of police, you know, I think when you look at the war on so-called war on drugs, you see the portal, the way they entered it, so that if there's a night raid now in Oakland, you have Kevlar-plated command helicopters, command centers, people dressed in black, carrying M16s. It looks no different from a night raid in Fallujah. And that's the point, that as the disintegration continues, the more brutal forms of control that are used on the outer reaches of empire migrate back to the heart of empire.
And the megacorporations then plan to even implode the old homelands and then just have a giant squalor that they rule over from private, heavily armed redoubts and cities. And that's now even their admitted plan, the RAND Corporation is saying. What a hellish vision. What a hellish world. It sounds like something the devil would come up with.
Yeah, and you have corporations like Bechtel buying up all the clean water in Chile and other places, because they know that pretty soon water, water for most of us will be contaminated and we'll have to pay for it, just like everything else. Yeah, I mean, they, you know, if you sit down inside the NSA or any other, their sort of analysis of where we're going is not going to be much different from yours or mine. It just doesn't make it out into the mainstream.
Well, that's right. They've got British Ministry of Defense reports, Pentagon reports, admitting a hellish world. And then if I cover it, the media calls it pessimism porn. Won't this be the defining moment when your case goes to the Supreme Court if they don't uphold the Constitution? I mean, this will be overthrowing Magna Carta, habeas corpus. I mean, this is probably one of the biggest cases ever. What is it like to be at the center of this?
Well, it's sort of bizarre in a sense because I agree with you. I mean, it is, and the judge agrees with us, that this is just this amazing attempt to essentially strip us of the rule of law, of due process, and yet it doesn't get covered. It doesn't get covered because both the Republicans and the Democrats are essentially beholden to corporate power and the security and surveillance state. I mean, this was a bipartisan effort sponsored by Carl Levin and John McCain. And so because the media won't step outside these very narrow parameters, which essentially stretch from A to B, that's what stunned me the most, how egregious the assault is, how naked the assault is, and how it's virtually uncovered. I mean, the New York Times did write a good editorial about it after the temporary injunction was issued, but, if you look on the airwaves, it doesn't exist. And yet you have all these people sort of shouting about the Constitution and civil liberties, and here in an incredibly overt attempt to take away, our right to trial, is silence.
And now I see a lot of conservatives going along with this when the government's now said, don't worry about Al-Qaeda, and we're going to use them and others to take down Syria and Libya and places. But, the new enemy is domestic threats, and they're out, like they've done with Muslims, provocateuring, militia groups in Michigan and things, trying to get some type of civil war going so they can now target the American people as the enemy. This is very cold-blooded.
I don't think it is a left-right issue. The American conservative just ran a long article called In Defense of Bradley Manning, raising precisely these points. And that's why I think that, the political theater of the Republicans and the Democrats, is really a kind of a mass money-drenched spectacle that diverts us from debating issues that I don't think, for anybody who cares about the rule of law and the democratic state, no matter what your political opinion is, there should be any divide on it all.
Well, that's right. We're all Americans. We're all humans. And if America becomes this pure tyranny, boy, the world better look out. If they think we've been doing bad stuff so far, Chris, look out. I know you've got to go. I'll talk to you briefly during the break if you can stay five more. I want to come back and talk about the book, but if not, folks.
No, sure. Let's do it.
Okay, Days of Destruction, Days of Revolt. I have not read it yet. I will read it because, let me tell you, when I see Chris Hedges' videos online, he's focused. He knows what he's talking about. He's articulate. I get mad and just yell and scream. I wish I was like him. But then I'm just a constitutionalist. I want my Bill of Rights. I want my Constitution. If that's liberal, if that's conservative, then that's what I am. But I just love Chris Hedges. And he's so good to come on and talk about this with us. We'll be right back to talk about his book for a few minutes. Stay with us.
From the front lines of the information war, it's Alex Jones.
Okay, we've got about 6-7 minutes left with Mr. Hedges holding over with us, Pulitzer Prize-winning author, journalist who's covered some of the most dangerous places in the world, and he's saying that, what he sees here in America, I want him to expand on that, is the worst he's ever seen so far. I want him to elaborate on that because it's intriguing. If I went over his bio here for folks that may not know who Chris Hedges is. He's been in over 50 countries. He's covered the big battle zones. He's covered world leaders. He's covered the Stasi and their activities. Just amazing. And he's got a new book out that we're going to be obviously breaking down as soon as I get a chance to read it. Days of Destruction, Days of Revolt. But I wanted him to go over basically what the book covers, because earlier he started mentioning that it's a reservation program. And I've interviewed a lot of Native Americans who've gone over the history. And they point out that Indian policy became what Hitler used. And I'd actually read that in Hitler's own writings that he used that model of the concentration camp off the reservation. The company store that keeps control of the people, keeps them in poverty, their life expectancy, and that's the whole model now of this corporate state. Get rid of your jobs and then give you a pittance to barely even keep you at subsistence, destroying destinies, destroying societies, so you can control them. And now the corporate state doesn't want even free market competition. It's coming in with regulations shutting down what's left of our industry. I mean, it's a cold-blooded, systematic, military-style takeover. So, Chris, break down your new book, which I can't wait to read, Days of Destruction, Days of Revolt.
Well, yeah, I mean, Alex, I think you nailed it. I mean, that's why we begin with Pine Ridge, because that's where it all began. And originally, those reservations were openly called prisoner of war camps. And you're right. They make self-sufficiency impossible and create this kind of culture of dependence, which destroys dignity, self-worth, community, with all of the attendant problems. That's why you have an 80% estimated 80% alcoholism rate on Pine Ridge. And everywhere we went, whether it was Camden, whether it was southern West Virginia, where people are taking Oxycontin, what they call hillbilly heroin, the drugs and the alcohol anesthetize people to the kind of pain and the suffering to which they have been reduced. And I think the reservation model is, in fact, one that we spent a lot of time reporting on and looking at for precisely that reason. When you reduce people to a level of desperation, it becomes far easier to control them. And that's what we're seeing. I mean, you know, just all sorts of, just in the last few weeks, the refusal to restore unemployment benefits for hundreds of thousands of Americans, which means tens of thousands of these people will eventually lose their homes, a number now over 6 million. There's just Obamacare is another example. It's a corporate, essentially the equivalent of the bank bailout bill for the pharmaceutical and insurance industry is $477 billion in subsidies. And of course, they can keep, as anyone such as myself knows who doesn't have a company plan, keep jacking up co-payments and premiums.
And I've got to interrupt. See, you're the only scholar out there on the so-called left, but you're just a human who wants freedom, who's honest that the insurance companies wrote it. And then the right wing gives Obama cover and goes, how dare you want to make us commies when the whole thing was written to let corporations control the quality of care, make you buy their product and jack up the price. I mean, it's such a fraud. But then you've got all the people on the left who mean well, supporting it through ignorance.
Yeah, it is. This is, I think, a very telling piece of legislation because it was written in the Heritage Foundation. It was first put into practice by Mitt Romney when he was governor in 2006 in Massachusetts, and then adopted by Barack Obama.
Incredible.
Obamacare is Obamacare. And that is a kind of window into the kind of false debates that go back and forth, because both of these two political parties are slavishly devoted to corporate interests. Obamacare is essentially forcing us to buy a defective corporate product, a for-profit product. It's staggering.
And what is the revolt angle of the book? Because, again, I haven't had a chance to read it yet. I'm going to order it today.
I think it's just this understanding that the formal mechanisms of power are not going to defend civil liberties or our interests or institute the kinds of reforms that will bring back the kind of egalitarian society that I think we all want, now resistance has to come outside those formal mechanisms of power. That means acts of civil disobedience. I was arrested with Occupy protesters in front of Goldman Sachs, going to jail is more time than I care to donate to the federal government. But I don't think we have any option left. And I'm not naive enough to even promise you that it will work. But I can tell you that the system is so corrupt. You take New York City police and you look closely, most of the egregious assaults against protesters were carried out by the white-shirted officers who were earning about $110,000 a year. There was a lot of fraternization with the blue uniform police because These corporations hire them, like Goldman Sachs and Citibank, as rent-a-cops for private security for $37 an hour in their off time so they can make some money.
Well, Goldman Sachs gave them, what was it? It was some giant amount of money the week before as a pure gift right to the police, a public bribe.
Yeah, J.P. Morgan, I think it was.
Yeah, J.P. Morgan.
Exactly. I mean, and I think, you know, when I covered the fall of East Germany, what happens is when the foot soldiers are no longer willing to defend the elite, you know, when Erich Honecker, the dictator in East Germany, sent down an elite paratroop division to Leipzig, where I was, and they wouldn't fire on the crowd, Honecker lasted another week in power. And I think that, part of the reason I'm guessing that the NDAA was pushed through, I think, is because there's a kind of fear among these corporate oligarchs that the police won't protect them.
Well, that's one of my final questions here. I got a few to race through. I want to know what else is in the book so people will definitely get it, because your ideas are right on from my own research, but so well laid out. That was my next issue. I'll guarantee you that if things continue to implode, the people they know that aren't going to shut up and go along are people like Chris Hedges, people like Alex Jones, people that they know are controlled by conscience, not because I'm some goody two-shoes, but because I don't want to live in a fascist state. I mean, I want my children to have a future. And they're really trying to set the precedent for this as they force people into a revolt, kind of arresting, and which they admit, scooping up people that they see as leaders.
Yeah. I mean, I think that once you create that legal mechanism that essentially permits or gives to the state that kind of power, then you're in really serious trouble. They use it on marginal elements within the society first, Muslims, black bloc anarchists, whatever, militia members, but you don't want to give them that kind of legal power, which we've already done, because they use the sort of fringe elements as a way to justify that kind of power, and then they turn it on the rest of us. That's exactly right, and history has just borne that out, you know, in conflict after conflict that I've covered and watched.
What about geopolitically? It seems like the world is kind of waking up to the fact that the United States has been seized by very evil forces.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was quite an opponent of the invasion of Iraq on that issue, and I had been the Middle East bureau chief for the New York Times, because it was not only a tactical blunder, but probably one of the most strategic blunders we made, in essence, throwing the balance of power to Iran. I think that, unfortunately, you know, we don't have a lot of friends left because of, I think, very misguided imperial projects that, again, of course, I mean, the war in Afghanistan, which, let's be frank, we're losing, there are a handful of corporations, Halliburton and Raytheon and on and on and on, that for whom this they make money as in all wars.
Could the Anglo-American establishment kind of stall and not have a Berlin Wall moment, but just kind of collapse like the Soviet Union?
I mean, that's the big question. I mean, collapse is coming. How does it come? Does it come gradually? Is there kind of a slow decline like the Ottoman Empire? Does it implode? These are questions that I ask all the time, but I don't have a definitive answer.
Well, I think they're going to try to go Hitler crazy and launch a bunch of wars that are so bad, everybody kind of lines up because we're in so much trouble. Well, yeah, the government's corrupt, but we're fighting Russia and China now, so let's line up. We just lost 500,000 people. I mean, I think the elite are that crazy. And the way they're digging in, the way they're getting everything ready, looks like they're gearing up for World War III at a scale much bigger than the Cold War. The COG, the armored pillboxes, the weapons caching. Studying history, Chris, in closing, I'm not just trying to be a fearmonger here. I'm scared. I mean, I've studied history. I'm a history buff. And they're digging in for what looks like not just a war with the people, but a war with everybody else.
Well, you know, that's as Randolph Bourne said, in World War One, he said war is the health of the state, by which he meant that when the state declares war, you're right, everybody lines up behind it, you know, in the name of patriotism and everything else, and it is in a very effective measure, as it was in World War One, to essentially crush any form of dissent. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, history has shown that to be a very effective tactic for despotic states to channel energy and rage and mute internal dissent by creating an internal enemy and going after it. I don't put it past them.
Well, hopefully your book will wake people up, and I know it's got amazing illustrations in it. Tell us a little bit about the book that you haven't covered and about the cartoonist that you worked with.
Yeah, this is Joe Sacco, who is an amazing reporter in his own right, does whole graphic novels that he reports out. We met in Bosnia in 1995, and I think one of the reasons I found him so important in the book, 50 pages of illustrations, as well as comic panels, sort of profiling people's lives, is that so many of these Americans by the corporate media have been rendered invisible. And I think one of the goals of the book was to make them visible. And Sacco did that, gave the book a kind of punch that pure prose wouldn't have had.
Do you have hope for the future? I mean, would you say it's a 60% chance we're going to go into this total tyranny, or is it a 70% or a 20%? I mean, what's your... there's few people who've traveled more, seen more, reported on more. So I really respect your view on this. I know our listeners do. If, I mean, looking into that crystal ball, what's our odds?
I think it looks pretty bleak, but I don't think we can use the word hope unless we actively resist every way possible, you know, which is why, you know, I was in protests outside Goldman Sachs, why I sued Barack Obama and Leon Panetta over the NDAA. I think it is a kind of moral imperative to resist. But at the same time, you know, a very sort of sober view, it doesn't look great.
Have you been threatened?
Yeah, but over my opposition to the Iraq war, and then interestingly by black bloc anarchists, who I've been very critical of.
Well, most of them are run by feds. Well, Chris Hedges. Oh, yeah. I mean, that's what I found from my research.
I'm sure.
Your website is also a great place for people to visit. Tell us about your website.
Truth Dig, yeah. This is Bob Shear's website out of L.A. I write a column every Monday for them.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Chris.
Thank you, Alex.
All right. There he goes. I ended up spending more time with us. Man, I wish he was wrong. I wish I was wrong. You know, last hour I kind of went into this ranting rage about the tyranny we face. But, I mean, I've bet my family that we can beat this. I mean, let me tell you, if I didn't think we could turn this around, I would leave the United States. Not that somewhere else would be perfect, but I would get out of the fight. Because let me tell you something. The people running things have made a friend with evil. They have decided that they're going to rule the world. They've got the power. They've got this historic moment. They're going to use it. And we've got to decide, we've got our historic moment as human beings that stand for freedom and justice to resist these people. Because, you know, Chris Hedges talks about how they want to render us impotent and where we can't have jobs in the future. That is the policy of the globalist. And, you know, Obama is not anti-colonialist. Colonialism became what you call globalist. And then the right wing packages anti-colonialist as communist, when the communists are actually running their own form of collectivist colonialism that then implodes and is taken over by the bankers. I mean, we're facing such a sophisticated situation. You know, people say, well, are you for Occupy or against it? The globalists talked about Occupy because their computers were able to predict that there would be flare-ups at that moment against the banks, and that people knew that the banker bailouts were a corporate transference of wealth from the people to the elite. Just a robbery, a private taxation mechanism. So they announce, everybody who's mad at corruption in Wall Street, show up. Then the Democratic operatives show up, but a lot of other activists as well. Soros is unable to take control of it. That was going to be kind of the revolutionary arm of the Obama second election. But with the corporatists running it, the Occupy folks got wise to that, didn't work, so then they flushed them. And Obama, in what, 37 locations nationwide and in multiple, you know, a whole bunch of states, 14 states, had people arrested in midnight raids directed by the feds. Folks, when your police are being directed by feds to scoop up protesters, you're not in Kansas anymore. You're in a dangerous police state. And what people don't get is, well, I don't care if I'm in a police state. I want cops and guys with machine guns on every corner because it's for Al-Qaeda. But see, it's not for Al-Qaeda now. It's for you. And it's because they're planning to take your bank account, they're planning to devalue your dollar, they're planning to take your pension fund, and I don't mean the government pension fund. I'm talking about your private ones. They're already doing that in Europe, putting taxes on them and stuff. I mean, I've got financial news on Europe I'm going to get to after, well, I guess Dr. Stallman's joining us. I'm almost out of time. Where is my financial stack? I mean, let me just hit a few of these right now. This is so serious. Folks, and for the minions that are serving this, we're not coming back from this, okay? You notice the deeper we get into globalism, NAFTA, GATT, any of it, things get worse because it's meant to be bad. They write white papers on it. It's horrible. It's not my opinion we're signing on to evil. It's happened. The same robber baron families funded Hitler. Okay, we're in trouble. These elites put Mao into power because they wanted to have a strong guy take over. Our government put Mao Zedong into power. That's been declassified for about 10 years. I just got chills saying that. Do you realize under globalist funding, he killed the Chinese, say, 85 million people? The CIA says 64 million? Man, they aren't playing games. They want to reorganize and kind of erase the disc, clear the table in America and Europe. And they are lining up the troops and the military to do it. And they're going to do most of it with starvation. And, man, I just don't want to go down this road. I mean, they've got America in the guillotine. And I'm saying, let's get our head out of here, man. Let's get our neck out of this thing. Let's wake up and say no. No, no, no. Well, you just heard a Pulitzer Prize-winning top journalist tell you we're going into absolute hell. And I have all the documents. I should have brought this up to him. It'll be about eugenics, about how they would give the blankets with smallpox and poisoned food and water to the natives to make them weak. They'd kill the strongest members. They'd kill people that tried to lead. And again, that was done to a minority. That's how cultures always do it. But then it ends up getting exported onto everybody. And now the troops have their death benefits that they take part of their check out of if they sign on to it and just steal it. And it was in Bloomberg and AP a couple times 2 years ago and never again. It's like, yeah, we take the death benefits of vets from World War II right through to the current conflict. Yeah, we run a scam on them. And yeah, the big banks launder the drug money and run the aircraft. And yeah, the troops grow the opium. And yeah, the troops are dying and have all these increased cancers and their kids are deformed from DU. But so what? Hey, did we tell you we're going to forcibly shoot your kids up in school? And make them, have abortions and say that they gave consent at 12 to have an abortion because we threw them in a truck and took them and had them sign a form. I mean, the government is just power grabbing and it's moving faster and faster. And I'm sitting there watching it happen. Look at and then I look at my kids and I look back at America and then I look at my kids. And I'm like, do I get out of here? I've said I'm going to stay to the end. These people don't understand what they're up against. Because if we knew what we were up against, we would say no. If you knew how bad it was, the danger is letting this win. People think, oh, it's dangerous to fight this. No, 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 no. Yeah, for people like me, sure. But for you, the danger is in going along with it. I mean, if I was a cop and there was somebody filming me down the street, it's something I was doing, I wouldn't run over and arrest them. You know that's the First Amendment. You know they're not a terrorist. Shame on you. You take their right away, you're going to get yours taken away, you idiots. You idiots. Do you have any idea what you're doing? How much danger going along with these orders is putting everybody in? And it's so planned. It's all in the RAND Corporation public documents. I remember reading RAND Corporation stuff in 98, 99, where there will soon be a giant terror attack. We will radically re-engineer America. Prepare for the attack. This will happen after the attack. And it was clear they were saying that it was going to be staged. And that was a good thing. And I'm just like, what? Hey, everybody, they're going to stage terror. They've done it before. Look. Now look what happened. See, they did it. Moody's lowers outlook, and you're like, our government did it? Yeah, the criminal elements that run our government and run Al-Qaeda did it. Yeah, you bet they did. And your naivete doesn't protect you. It endangers you. It allows this to happen. Moody's lowers outlook for European Union's credit rating to negative. Well, I mean, that was, but I thought they gave the foreign bankers all their money. That would fix it. Oh, as I told you, it's only going to get worse because it's designed to. And then they always pose as the savior. Breakdown. 3 tons of food looted from grocery stores in Spain as millions struggle. Yeah, they're still getting their welfare checks, but their currency doesn't buy it anymore. Food stamp use climbs to record, reviving campaign issue. 46.7 million. That's only one type. It's more like 70 million are on partial food stamps. Let's continue. Chart of the day, 803 years of global inflation, 803 years of global inflation. And it shows how there's been as much inflation in the last 100 years as there had been in the 800, 900 years previous. But there's no inflation. Continuing here with the news, ladies and gentlemen. EU says Greeks should work 6 days a week. CNBC, yeah, because they're lazy. Most of that debt's the bankers, but they sign you onto their debt and then tell you how they're lazy. Incredible. Incredible. Incredible.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.